This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wrestling Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, how's it going, man?
Oh, fantastic, Pete. I'm really excited for this week's special episode.
Yeah, that's right, man. We have TJ McClune over here, part of the Place to Be Nation, but also part of the Inspire family, man. TJ, how's it going?
It's going well. You know, with the TV, it was weird speaking off air, being Timothy. I came very close to answering your tee up for your co-host there, so I'm glad I didn't completely derail this episode a whole 30 seconds into it.
That's awesome. So, man, tell us what exactly you do for Inspire.
So, I'm part owner of the company. I came on doing business transactions with my degree in sport management and my 10 years in sales and business and marketing. I got on with the company. Actually, Justin, you know, Biss, and I, we met in a Dallas hotel over WrestleMania weekend, WrestleMania 32, March of 2016, and we talked about doing some business, doing some work together, and me coming on board just as a, you know, part-time business person, part-time, get some companies involved through sales and sponsorships, and, you know, growing Inspire not only in the local Austin market but nationally as well. And over time, we got out of the Marchesa, went into Red Oak, did that deal, and then got out of Red Oak and gotten currently into the Austin Sports Center, which we're currently at up for, you know, our last show in March and our next one coming up May 28th. And through that time, you know, I met with Biss and Max, and they said, hey, why don't you come on board as part of the ownership group? And I was thrilled. At first, I thought they were just pulling a prank on me because they know how big a wrestling fan that I am and how much I love the company and love the business as well. So I waited until after the show when they brought it up to me to be like, okay, this is a real thing. This isn't like we're happy, we're involved in the show, everything's going great, we've had a few shiners, let's do this now. So the ones that we really got into the talks after the December event, I'm like, oh, this is real. So ever since the end of the year and beginning of this one, I've you know, really helped out and had my role expand with them. So right, and I love the company, I love the sport, and I'm happy to be doing what I do with Inspire Pro and help grow the indie scene in Austin.
Yeah, I know. That's real. I mean, you're like one of the bigger indie scenes and bigger companies in Austin, and you guys deliver a good show after good show. It's like a really consistent thing. You guys have fun undercards. Your main events usually deliver, if not all the time delivering, or there's always a match you just really sink your teeth into. We reviewed one of the shows. I can't remember what it was, but it was the one with Sammy Guevara and Ray Rowe that Timothy and I reviewed for the show, and we thought that was one of the best. I thought that might have been the best Inspire show I'd ever seen. It's up there. It's easy top three, and that had a match of the year contender in Ray Rowe and Sammy Guevara. I thought that match was just absolutely incredible, which leads me to the upcoming show in May 28th. License to Death Wish, and with headlining with Keith Lee and Sammy Guevara. I mean, right when I saw that announced, I immediately got my front row ticket. What can we expect from that match? I mean, my mind's already playing like mind games with me because of how excited I am about this.
I mean, for Sammy to get booked with Keith, I mean, the name of the show fits, you know, what he's walking into. It's a license to a death wish to go against Keith Lee. I mean, to see what Keith did on the national stage during WrestleMania weekend with his, you know, 3,000 shows for Flow Slam he was a part of. I mean, it's like the quote Mr. T in Rocky III. Pain is what to expect. It's going to be a brutal matchup with Keith using his size. And if Sammy can use his quickness, he may be able to pull the upset over someone that's held the Pure Prestige title for, let's see, I think we're on day 596 right now of the Keith Lee Pure Prestige title reign. I may be off by a day, two, or 100, depending on what the actual number is. You have to ask Chris Drew about what the number. Chris Drew knows the exact number to the date and almost the hour, the minute, and the time of when Keith won that Pure Prestige title back in 2015.
You know, and speaking of Chris Drew, I think they add a whole lot to the Keith Lee package that the national people haven't really seen in Evolve because he's not working Evolve. But I think it actually, with the whole package they have, I think it even adds more to the Keith Lee character, if you will. What do you think?
You need the Roxy Castillo entrance to make the Keith Lee thing great. You know, I've had Keith Lee on my own little podcast, the TJ Macklin Show, over at Texas HS Football once beforehand to talk about his time as a Texas A&M Aggie when he was in college, among other things like computer science, because this guy's the biggest nerd that I know. If you see Keith Lee during May, he'll want to talk to you about wrestling, but he'll also want to talk to you about building and taking down and rebuilding a computer from scratch. It's amazing the stuff that this guy knows. But yeah, the Roxy entrance, that makes Keith bigger. It made his aura for me when I first saw him in an Inspire show back in the Marchesa days, and to where it is now, and to where we're at the Austin Sports Center.
Yeah, it's also something to hang Inspire Pro to hang their hat on both these guys, because, I mean, obviously Biss has, I think, he's a guy who doesn't get the pot, not pot, he's not like he gets this negative rap, but he doesn't get the same, like, cachet that a lot of people who they say has great eye for talent. But I think Biss, man, that guy can pick out talent. Like Keith Lee, he picked him out before he's an Evolve. Sammy Guevara is now getting a shot. He's a guy who Biss picked out early. ACH, we all know the history with him and Biss.
Right.
Matthew Palmer, we saw this year at WrestleMania at the Revolver show, I believe he got a big push there. The guy, he seems like he's really pushing now, is Terrell Tempo. Sees a lot in him. What do you think? How is it that Biss is able to just pick out these guys and just seems like he's able to just repackage people? Not repackage, but just restock the shelves time and time again.
Yeah, I mean, with his talent management skills, it's from a long time in the business. I know I saw him post a thing the other day on his Twitter that he's been in the business for 10 years. And with that time, you gain a lot of knowledge of what to look for and to what to see someone that may look good on one stage, but you know, when you try to put them into a different avenue or light, they're not really going to shine. Between him and also Max, our other person's on our ownership team, and his storytelling and his ability to write the angles and write the backstories these fans come back into, it's what makes someone go from, you know, a nice hand, a nice worker, to that person that everyone's going to come back month after month after show, they'll come back and always watch. Point in case, Tempo, for one, yes. I saw his first show back in, I think, 2015, when he was just doing an opening card match against, I forget who, maybe Moonshine Mantel, who's now Maverick over at the NWL scene up in St. Louis. And to now, to get headliner matches with, Lance Hoyt, the four-man he did with Steve-O and Palmer, I think back in September or October, whenever that was, I think it was in August, regardless, to now ACH, their time limit draw, whenever they went for over 30 minutes at our last show, to now having a semi-main event against Matthew Palmer at the next one in May, it is a testament to how far someone will go. Another person as well, Steve-O Reno. You know, now Inspire Pro champion. You know, look at his career arc from where the company started back in 2013 or 14 to where he is now, going against Leo Rush, for of all people. Leo Rush, someone that is not only on the independent scene, but making waves to some of the higher ups at the biggest company that in the wrestling world. Someone that we should expect to see him in, you know, Orlando in the next coming months, to if not the end of the year.
Yeah, and that's a match. I mean, Leo Rush for Steve Reno. I mean, that's another match that could be the best match on the card. I mean, when it all is said and done, I mean, you have Leo Rush definitely has all this buzz going, and this is just a great showcase match for Steve Reno to show more people and get more eyeballs on Steve Reno and the Inspire brand as the champion, on how good this guy really is, too, that he can keep up and go with Leo Rush.
Yeah, it's the thing. I mean, I know Steve-O here outside of the ring and outside of our business as well. And it's a great story for what we did before the last show in March. Was we took him back to his St. Ed's University whenever he was just learning the wrestling craft, and just as a student, and filmed him just on his campus, you know, going back into his history of saying, hey, this is where I grew up, not only as a person, but as a wrestler on these streets. And across the way is our venue where we ran our first show, Austin Sports Center. And so it builds that emotional backbone to where you're going to these shows because you've invested your time into these people. And you're not just going to a show just because, oh, I saw this guy on Ring of Honor and now he's in my city and I want to go watch him against this guy against Lucha Underground. No, you come to our shows because you know the pain and the struggle and where these people go to, you know, like a David Vega traveling 16 hours from St. Louis to Austin just to entertain us. You know, it's amazing what these people do and what they go put themselves through just to entertain our fans for, you know, 30 minutes to maybe in the ring for.
Yeah, that's another name, David Vega. He's been, I mean, Biss has used him forever, and he's teaming up. He's the part of the tag champion controversy with Delilah Doom, another person. Mm-hmm. Biss has his
a huge up and comer. I mean, if she's with our company this time next year, I'll be highly surprised.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen her on Raw. We've seen her. I mean, you've heard all the stories about her being at the, you know, getting tryouts in the Performance Center. So she's mm-hmm. definitely on the WWE's radar. She's such a dynamite charisma. And she's a gal who at first the crowd didn't immediately take to her, but she by her hard work and getting to know her, now the crowd absolutely loves her, and it's just a great story. And they're working the world's cutest tag team. And
yeah,
I mean, Vega is a guy who's just, you know, he's getting out there now. He's over at AAW getting a lot of press. And this is another match that's going to be super fun, you know. And I honestly, I think I enjoy watching Davey and Delilah more than I do Joey and Candice LeRae, but I love them both, right. And I'm expecting a fun match, you know?
Yeah, that's what, and that's the beauty of our shows, is that you're going to get the heavy fight between, say, Sammy and Keith, or the entertaining, you know, classic matchup between Steve-O and Leo, which I just realized, we've been putting this card together for months, and I just realized Steve-O and Leo just completely rhyme, and I can't believe I didn't think of that until just now, but the Candice and Joey versus Davey and Delilah is going to be the most fun match of the night. And yep. it's like when the Submission Squad, when they had their final match against the ghost of Chris Benoit. And I'm forgetting the other one, the other ghost. I'm forgetting, lapping on their name.
Barrett Brown?
Yeah. Well, the Barrett Brown came out later, but
that's right.
The tag match before that, where they did the ghost scene with the pottery wheel and, yeah, it's those matches are my most fun matches to watch, just because you can just be a fan and enjoy yourself. And it's why I know as part ownership, I can't really say, hey, I like this person, but this one. But Davey Vega is probably my favorite wrestler that comes to these shows, just because there's two things that just made me laugh just thinking about it. One, when he was getting beat up at one of the Red Oak shows while holding the microphone and still commentating on him getting beat up.
Yes, you know, I loved it.
Yeah, exactly. Just saying, stop hitting me, you know, over the PA. Just funny. And also, at the end of our last show at Marchesa, May of 2016, when he told a child, I hope Freddy Krueger comes and visits you in your dreams tonight, before exiting. That was phenomenal. While covered in streamers and confetti with Tim Storm, which was just, it was the tip of the iceberg right there. And I'm like, you're done. Over. Favorite wrestler right there, while telling an 8-year-old child, I hope Freddy Krueger visits you tonight in your dreams.
Right. And then we also have Jojo Bravo and Maximus. I mean, again, Jojo Bravo is one of the best comedy workers on working right now. And he also can flat out work. That's his calling card, is the comedy. But when he needs to, the guy can go up and just do what he can do, what anybody else can do. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. And you guys are doing combining the J Crown along with the females are now in there. So I think that adds a little layer to it.
Here's the thing with JoJo, or now CRS, I believe. Yes. This is where he's going by now. He hasn't lost in almost 2 years now. If you think of it, his last loss might have been in 2015. He hasn't lost a match since we moved out of Marchesa. For by hook or by crook, this guy is on a Goldberg-esque winning streak.
Hey, largest sumo in the land, you know?
Right, exactly. And look at the names he's taken down as well. Andy Dalton, this last match with J Crown. Yep. Before that, Kikitaro, an international legend among wrestlers. Before that, Cherry, you know, Juicy Ramones, someone that is another up and comer that, with Biss and Max's fingerprints all over, has really gone from someone that may have been opening a card with under Nigel's, you know, leadership, to now someone that's really standing out and getting a lot of momentum behind him.
Yeah, he's cut a lot of weight on him too, and it, like his body looks like he's looked like he's really. I don't want to say he wasn't taking it serious before because that's not the right term, but you could just tell by his diet and the way his body's shaping up that he's putting a lot of time in the gym. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's proven as well. I will say at the last show, I was very upset that I missed the part when they kicked on the Ricky and Glacius and started playing Balamos. I heard it while I was getting a drink, and I'm like, oh, son of a – I wish I'd been there just because it's a great song. It's a great song.
And it was a great spot.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you cannot hate on any show that can somehow work in Enrique Iglesias.
Exactly. And then you got Ivory Robin, and this is for the J Crown number one contender match versus Alley Cat. And I'm a big Alley Cat fan, so is Timothy. She's a gal who I think has a lot of potential, and I think you're going to see her traveling a lot. And she's really gotten getting her feet wet here in Inspire Pro, and this is another match that could another strong looking match on paper.
Yeah, I mean, from where she started with Lane as the Blanterage.
Yep.
And now coming out on her own as Alley Cat, she's going to be making a lot of waves, from our show, coming up, our last show that we had where she had that great triple threat with Delilah to now going to this number one contention for the J Crown. And who knows where she's going to go for the end of this year. There's big and bad and big and great things on store for her. And not only in our company, but in the other company here in Austin, Wrestler Circus, she opened that show, their giant South by show. So for you to not only get on that card, but to be a winner coming out of that, that says a lot of where you're coming up in this, this new hotbed that here in Austin.
Yeah, for sure. And then we get Matthew Palmer versus Terrell Tempo. I mean, people who don't know about Palmer, I mean, let me, I'm going to brag on him a little bit. The guy can brawl. Yeah. He can go high fly with ACH. The guy can talk. He's a good looking dude. And on top of it, the one match he had with Steve Areno, I legit thought he blew his knee out on his cell job. When I first saw that, I was like, wow, he got me. I thought he blew his knee out.
Or how about during the Battle Royal in December, whenever at the end of the match, you thought he was too hurt to go, and he was doing the Valor thing by restarting the match and saying, hey, let's just have a title match now instead of waiting until later, only to hook everybody in and say, oh, I wasn't really injured.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you buy into him. He's a guy who he's worked hard throughout these years, and Inspire Pro, he's always had a good showcase here. And he's a guy who's finally getting other bookings and getting more of a national presence. We've seen him on Flow Slam here and there.
Yeah.
And another guy who, might be traveling a lot more globally, but United States, maybe even globally and stuff, against Tempo, who's a nice up-and-comer. I absolutely love that match with ACH. I've got to give you guys credit. It took balls to try to turn ACH heel in Austin, Texas, knowing him as the king of Texas. And it absolutely worked for me. It was totally Jerry Lawler out of Memphis.
Right.
You guys, he tried to do the work shoot type of thing going, and then they worked a little stiffer with one another. And ACH was totally being a complete jerk. I absolutely love that match. It totally transfixed me. Total story living driven. And I was like, I mean, whoever decided to do it, I mean, you guys did a chance. Gambled in it. I mean, paid off big time because I was absolutely mesmerized by the whole entire thing. And I've always thought ACH would make a great heel, because I thought once Evolve lost McIntyre, I thought ACH would be a great lead heel for that company. And by showing him here, and I've seen him do it in Mexico, the guy can be a great heel. But that match, I was just floored with, and it showed a lot of the young Tempo, show young and being able to be able to keep up there with ACH. That was really impressive. And I think the sky's the limit. The guy has a great look to him. He's athletic. He just needs to put a couple more pieces together,
Well, I'm just glad that we moved to a new venue where his music doesn't completely kill our speakers. I remember we actually tested out his music before the show started just to make sure that once the beat drops on, turn down for what, we won't lose our entire crowd because you won't be able to hear anything. So I was very happy that we got out of that Red Oak place and we got into a place that his music can actually breathe and thrive and go. But I mean, with ACH, it's like they always say, the best jokes have a little truth in them. So right. His attitude towards that match, I get where he's coming from. You know, you're a guy that your time with Ring of Honor, while it might not have been what exactly you're hoping it would be with creativity, with number of titles, with whatever it may be, you know, you're coming not back down, but you're going from being on TV every week to now coming back to the independents where you start. And here's a young guy in Tempo who is, you know, saying, hey, I can be on your level, whereas your ACH, you're thinking, bleep you, you're not my level. You know who I am, where I've been in Japan, where I've been in Germany, where I've been in Ireland, where I've been with Ring of Honor on TV doing supercards and doing Glory by Honor and all these major shows. And who are you, Terrell Temple? So I get where he's coming from and saying, no, you're not on my level. And, I'm not going to take you seriously. And in doing so, he almost got caught and beaten a couple of those times. So when he grabbed the mic and said, no, these fans are going to chant fire and mist. No, why should I give him 5 more minutes? This is my time. Like, I don't need to give you more of my time. So I get where he's, I can see where it's came across as a work shoot, but there's probably a lot of truth in his feelings behind when he started, rambling off what he said.
Probably right. You're absolutely probably right. And then we see this is a match I'm super excited about. Matt Fitch, and he's a guy who I've always been high on
right.
ever since I've seen him. And Dirty Andy Dalton, who was a great Inspire Pro champion, who is he's a heel's heel. Even when he's working babyface, he's a heel's heel. He's just dirty, and I expect these guys to have a great match. I mean, Dalton has great in-ring psychology. Fitchett can do anything in the ring. I think this is a great match, and it's a match that could steal the show. I mean, that's how good these guys are.
Because of Dalton, I got a drink thrown on me back in Marchesa days. He was this is true. It was during the Angelus Keith Lee match from whenever it was, back in 2015 or whatever. And this is when he was Inspire Pro champion. The day he lost to Ricky Starks, which you want to talk about someone that from the moment I always say this to him, and I feel like a gushing fan meeting someone that they like, they watch on TV every single week. But I tell him, like, dude, from the first time I saw you come out to, touch the sky, this is probably back in 2013 or so. And I'm like, yeah, this is a guy that has a lot of money written all over him, or a lot of someone that should be going somewhere big. So I feel bad that, we're not using him in the sense of there's no, it's whenever he lost to Keith, it's kind of like, I've done everything I could, where do I go from here? When he lost that one-on-one match, yeah. So I get why he dropped the belt, because it's a crushing loss. It's like, I'm trying to think, it'd be like if Peyton Manning at the end of Super Bowl 50, whenever they lost to Seattle, or I'm spacing right now. Who they beat? No, they beat the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
Whenever Manning, if he would have lost that game and say, I got nothing left in me. I'm not doing this anymore. I get why he left, the belt, and why he left, not left the company, but he just left his spot, basically. But just saying, that's a long-winded way of me saying how much of a fan of Ricky Starks that I am, and that hopefully one day he'll be back with one of our cards. That being said, Andy Dalton, when he was a working heel, one of the fans didn't like him so much, started saying F-bombs to him, Andy's taunting him. The buddy that was sitting next to the guy who was saying F-bombs to Andy said, hey, throw your drink on him. The fan said, yep, great idea. He goes to throw his Aquafina bottle. His Aquafina bottle makes it maybe about 5 feet in front of him and crashes over my left shoulder and all over my chest. And I got what was intended for Andy as Andy's laughing his head off manically. And I'm sitting there drenched wet, looking like I'm at a Gallagher show.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm a huge Dalton fan.
We're not awesome.
I'm a huge Dalton fan. I'm an old school wrestling fan at heart. And you can see a little Michael Hayes influence in him on his jabs, and he just has really just understands wrestling. And he's a second generation wrestler. It's just fantastic. And Fitchett is a guy who he's making waves at AAW, and it's great to have him back on an Inspire Pro show too.
One half of the best season in the world.
Yeah, that's right, with Davey Vega. And then we have Gary J., another guy who I absolutely love. I'm going to be driving up to or flying down in August to Scenic City Invitational that he's working a tournament down there, and he's working Alex Rain. And Gary J. is another guy who just has good match after good match. It's, I mean, if you see Gary J., it's like almost impossible for the guy to have a bad match. He's that consistent. And Alex Rain is a – I think he's a good worker too.
Yeah, exactly. It's the two guys that, I mean, we've seen a little bit of, but that's the beauty of Biss and Max. They know what talent to get and what to bring in and stuff you won't see at any show that just throws a bunch of people that you normally would see on TV. You know, we're getting the people that you won't see anywhere, really. Or if you might see them, they'll be on little clips here and there or GIFs here and there. But we're giving them a platform to shine and ability to be, you know, give them 8 to 10 minutes to go do your work and entertain a bunch of people.
Exactly. And then here's what I want to know. Where did you guys find the heavy hearts? Because I saw them the last show, and I was absolutely loved them. I thought they were a great underneath tag team. They were great with comedy. They had good timing and knew how to tell a good story. And they're in this No Mercy gauntlet, which with the Great Depression, Mr. B. And who else is in that? Gannicus. I mean, This looks like it should be. What exactly is the No Mercy Gauntlet anyway?
Would you believe me if I told you we thought about Round Rock Donuts?
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. No.
I mean, well, they're big boys.
Yeah, exactly. When they came in, I was like, oh, hey, you're security. Oh, you're working. Oh, you're this Heavy Hearts team. And I was just insanely entertained by them. But no, they've been around for a while. I mean, they're your pros that know how to come in, work, cut good promos, you know, get the crowd fired up, and then work a hell of a match like they did with the Epileptic Caesars, which another team. I mean, yes, one half is in this Limitless Dark matchup, and the other half is fighting CRS in the J Crown. So they're a group of people that, you know, put together, and they're just kicking ass and taking names right there. So Heavy Hearts, I'm glad they're coming back. I'm glad they enjoyed their time here with us, and yeah, it's going to be great to see what they can do. And with this whole, you know, the gauntlet match here, it's going to be a crazy. I mean, me, like I said, I do mainly of the business side of it. So that's not to say that I know of what's going on, you know, when it comes to this No Mercy gauntlet, but it's going to be something wild. And it's going to be interesting to see who comes out of it with either Mr. B or Depression, which we saw what they did in singles match last time. With Mr. B, Chi-Town's Finest, pulling off an upset win against, you know, the newly reformed Depression and newly weight cut Depression with Gregory Simmons behind him, guiding him, getting him pregnant, and being his being his spiritual advisor.
I love Simmons. He's such the perfect Austin manager. He's just fantastic in that role. This is May 28th, 2017. License to Death Wish. It's one thing I always like. I think it's always key on independent promotions where the backbone, yeah, we have some national stars here, but the backbone is the local workers. And you guys have them loaded to the gills and stuff.
Yeah. Timothy, like I said, we're here to promote, you know, the Austin brand. Whereas we may not be the Best Buy or the, I guess, where else you can buy a CD from nowadays. We're more the local independent, you know, shop where you go in there to find your artists that no one else really knows about except for you. You know, you may see them get big, you may see them be on a bigger stage or what have you, but you've seen them beforehand and you're like, oh yeah, I saw, like Keith Lee. I remember my first time ever meeting him was him eating a Subway sandwich before a match at Marchesa when no one else knew who he was. And I just happened to get him on KXAN to do the little lunchtime show at 12:30. Every day to promote our upcoming event, and just him being like, oh hey, what's up man, just thank you for the TV time. And that morphed into him doing Babalu Sports Sunday on KI last summer, so now he's, you know, should be on Monday nights in the next coming probably 18 to 24 months. So it's great to see these people, and you know, that's what we get at our shows. You get great stories, people you can fall into, and then the people that are up and coming rather than established stars.
Cool. Hey, Timothy, you have anything for TJ before he heads out?
Yeah. I didn't realize you were the same TJ that had the podcast that was on PTBN before. I may have to try to get in contact with you for my interview show where we kind of talk to people who do stuff with PTBN or podcasts in general.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get to know you a little bit better outside of...
Love,
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I used to love jumping on those Sunday shows with the Scott and just trying to make funny lyrics, and well, not lyrics, but make funny NHL comments and say how much I hated the New York Rangers and Islanders and watch your head explode.
But yeah, I mean, with you doing the business side of things, I mean, obviously we won't get into any of the kind of minutiae, I guess, of the wrestling cards, although that is exciting. But with so many, I guess, first question would be, with so many of the talent now kind of spreading their legs in the company, especially, you know, you got Bolt Brady, who's now involved with NWL. You've got Delilah Doom, who's involved with, like, Sabotage and Rise, companies that have kind of, I guess, a market share, a market protection that they do. Have you had those companies coming out to you, talking to you guys about partnerships?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, the only partnership we ever really worked on and did collectively was our Chikara Super Shows, that where we would have a lot of their talent from Philadelphia coming in, which you saw last year with Dasher and Orange Cassidy and I'm blanking on the Snakes that came in as well. What their names were. There it is. Yes, exactly. You know, we partner in with them, or Tassaris. Yeah, sorry. You know, we partner in with them a lot. So, but outside of that, you know, NWL, Vega, one of our guys to come in. Pierre from Submission Squad, you know, who really works up there with St. Louis, where he had his last match in Inspiring back in December. You know, same with Evan as well. If they would ever want to come down and, you know, put something together, I'm sure we could be very interested in that. Or hell, the company that's just down the road at 800 Congress, Wrestle Circus. You know, I would love to do something with them and put on a super show, you know, down the line.
Yeah, because, I mean, so many – you talk about Terrell Tempo. He's having what I think is probably his first – match in California here next month. He's wrestling in San Diego for a company that's just starting out, and we've talked back and forth a little bit that with me being in Southern California, Pete being in Texas, you guys obviously in Texas, I talked with another friend who works for a company that's in Arizona. There's almost a group of talent who drive back and forth. And with CZW working with I think it's Dave Marquez for the United Wrestling Network putting together this thing, it almost feels like this kind of Southwest region is becoming you know, its own territory again. So it's just interesting to know if you guys have any, you guys have been reached out. I know Sabotage, they run women's shows in Texas and in Southern California. So you would think with your connection with Dahlia Doom, Alley Cat as well there, that I would assume you guys would be in the market to do something with them and maybe even bolster your women's division would be one thing. Would you guys ever think about reaching out to others like that? Or do you guys kind of focusing on your own stuff right now and just the level that you're at?
I mean, it's a little column A, a little column B is the answer I'd say to that. Is that, like, Sabotage, they're running a show this weekend at Grizzly Hall. You know, Heel Face Wrestling, our friends over there that run the podcast out here in Austin, they're heavily involved in working that Sabotage show and really pumping that up. So I'm excited to see Delilah and her 17,000 titles she holds now walk into that arena and really kill it again. Same with Alley Cat. Same with someone else that's on my radar, and I know our radar as well, is with Thunder Rosa. It's someone that I've seen pop up all over the place, and I hope that we get to work with her in the near future. But Steve-O, someone that we Inspire Pro Champion, is now branching out the Phoenix, like you just said, with Phoenix in Southern California as well. So we're really excited to see just the roots of talent from our little Central Texas area spread out west, and same with going east too. You see Matthew Palmer, Florida guy. I'm trying to think who else came in from Florida. Sammy Callahan, the last show, came in with Palmer from Florida. So I'm not sure if it's where he's looking at now, but they all came in from the Florida area. So it's great to see just everyone coming out and coming in. And if other promotions want to, you know, say, hey, here's some, you know, XYZ that would be great for your show, you know, I'm always all ears to have, you know, bigger and better people come in, or, you know, more talent coming in, because the more the better, the more the merrier, in my opinion.
Right, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, and the other side of things, I guess the final for me is just License to Death Wish, obviously a great looking show coming on. I don't necessarily know that you guys have live streaming VOD, or if you're planning on partnering, distributing further, do you have anything in the works or any plans that you're willing to talk about, or even just maybe a hint just to let us know that things might be getting a little bit easier to find the stuff coming down the line?
Yeah, so Exia Gold 4 is up on Fight TV right now. We made our partnership with them at the beginning of this year to stream our first show, which was on March 24th for video on demand release. Right, 2 weeks ago, I think it was, whatever. I think the week after Easter, with a 2-year-old, another kid on the way. My dates just are completely just brainwashed. I feel like Schwarzenegger and Running Man. Whenever his head gets like just blasted, and I have no clue what time of day it is, especially with a 2-year-old that loves to throw Benoit style headbutts to me, and also working. She does not know how to pull a punch. I'll say that when it comes to either like saying hi or like trying to play with daddy. Now she's getting to the age now of over 2 to where she's turning to a wrestling buddy. At times, just like finding ways to jump on me or saying the word body slam, which is a word I didn't teach her. Body slam, I don't know who did. Now she says the word power bomb, that has my fingerprints all over it. But body slam, that's me. That's not me at all. So but Fight TV is up on there now. The May show, we'll see where we can get it off from there, but it's we'll keep people notified if there's a way to watch it.
That's awesome. TJ, man, appreciate your time. I know you got to run. Anything else you want to talk about, Inspire, before you head out?
No, aside from I'm on Pins and Needles for Game 6 tonight at Penn's Capitals. Outside of wrestling, I'm a huge hockey fan. So if anybody loves to talk about Pittsburgh sports, especially – like there's a great website called Steel City Apparel, I think it is, where I just picked up a nice Cannonball Club T-shirt, which if you're Bullet Club – I don't see how you don't trademark the Bullet Club style because everyone is ripping it off. Everyone's ripping it off.
Yep. Someone's making a lot of money.
Yeah. Everyone. I mean, from this new I'm getting Cannonball Club to I know there's other people with just like if you're a golf club, you might as well put like Iron Club or Flagship Club or whatever it may be. Just like might as well just completely pimp it out. Like I may go to my kid's daycare and just say, hey, Avery Ranch Club. Just make that a thing now. Just have a little 3-year-old wearing your daycare's logo, but like with club on the bottom of it, you know?
Oh, that's great. That's it. All right, man. TJ.
Exit on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, TJ. TJ McClune from Inspire Pro, May 28th. A License to Death Wish here on Austin. If you're in the local area, Austin Sports Center, May 28th, 2017, 425 Woodridge Street, Austin, Texas. Front row is sold out, if I'm not mistaken.
That is true.
You can get GA for $15. That's a great deal. Doors open 5:30, bell time 6, and Inspire Pro runs a pretty tight ship. So I see that bell maybe at latest going off at 6:10.
It's Memorial Day weekend. What else are you going to do?
Exactly. It's fun wrestling.
You don't got to work tomorrow. You don't got to work tomorrow.
I can tell you, every show I've ever been to, I've had at least fun at. And some of them I thought have been just incredible shows. So come out there, support the local indie wrestling, have fun with a bunch of other knuckleheads who love the sport of professional wrestling, man. TJ, thanks a lot.
And my offer still stands, as I said on Twitter for the last show. I'll say it again here on your podcast. If you come up to me and my buddy Casey comes to all my shows – and you say to Casey that, first off, you say hi to me. There's a good chance I'll buy you a drink from our bar sponsored by Box Life afterwards when he comes to say hi. We have a little chat. But if you come to my buddy and tell him that Yadier Molina is an overrated catcher, I'll buy you more than just a drink. I'll tell you that much.
Awesome. Y'all heard it here.
Yadier Molina is an overrated catcher just to see his St. Louis Cardinals head explode. So that will make my night if I can hear someone finally say that to him.
And now we're going to be looking at a PWX, Enter the Dragon, which has a Red Dragon headlining against Anthony Henry and Caleb Conley, which on paper sounds like a pretty fun match, but we'll get to that. We're going to have we start off and we have White Mike opens and he's cutting a promo and the Revolt comes out and we get the Revolt versus White Mike, Tracer X, and Jake Manning. I thought this was a fun opener. I liked how the faces stood tall early on. We got the double dive. Really good shine. Riley cuts off Tracer X, and we see Tracer X work as a Fight Imperial. I thought that was well done. I liked the triple beatdowns, and it was a good solid tag. About in the good 2.5-star range. Good solid opener. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. Good opener. 2.5-star. There's a lot of goofiness. This is like the perfect spot for pretty much everybody in this match, except for I'd say maybe Tracer X. You could possibly get a little bit more out of him in like the top level spot festy matches or whatever. But all in all, everybody else is kind of suited well. But for me, it's tough because as much as I like this and I think it's good, like, it does makes me just retroactively continue to question why, like, Jake Manning and the Revolt were pushed for so long at the top of the card as, like, the most important acts in the company and stuff like that. So it's like, I shouldn't blame them for now having the guys in the right spots, but it does kind of make you just go, like, ah, I mean, why were these guys, like, top guys for so long just recently? When this
sometimes,
is,
sometimes it is. It's just that they know they'll be there. They know they're not going to get signed by the companies, or they're going to lose them to bigger and better things. So sometimes you try to build with guys you feel who can carry it, but you don't feel like they'll have serious star power on a bigger level, if that makes any sense.
Right, and it was kind of an in-between time with Cedric Alexander leaving, who, you know, his Dream Match series was a big part of PWX for a while there. And then, yeah. Who was it who got injured? Someone got hurt. Oh, Ethan Case getting hurt when he did. And a lot of stuff like that just kind of affected, I guess, everybody that was available. So that was kind of why they carried through. But, yeah, 2.5 star. I don't know why Mike has to take the pin from Caleb Connolly. But I guess in some ways that makes sense. If that team had to win, you don't really want to pin Tracer X or Jake Manning. So I think maybe for me, if you're going to just have the opener, just have the faces get the win all in all. But whatever, you know, fine opener, fun stuff.
What do you think of Cutshaw versus Chris Mayne?
I think that Joshua Cutshaw has really developed this hard-hitting kind of character and made that a big part of his kind of everything involved. Like, his character's unhinged. His style is super hard-hitting and brutal-looking. It's good stuff. Mayne is bumping around for him. Underdog fighting back here when he can. It's stuff like this where I go, like, the PWX booking can be very clear and very good, where I'm like, this is exactly what you want to do to put over Cutshaw with a guy like Mayne who can make him look good. But then there, it kind of, a lot of times the booking feels like it leads to nowhere. So it's like, even though this is really good, again, I probably shouldn't question it before it happens, but it does make me kind of go, God, like, they get all the building blocks right, and then it seems like they can never, like, launch the stuff at the end right. Meanwhile, Mayne, I think, you know, solid, athletic, bigger guy, but in a company that has Timmy Lou Retton, who's bigger and more agile, it's kind of like you're the second fiddle for being the bigger, somewhat bigger, agile guy. Big elbow puts him down. I like that realization elbow. It's a nice, solid, just knockout blow finisher. Again, 2.5 star, though. Nothing super special. Just kind of a shine-up match for Cutshaw. I think it served its purpose really well.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty much an enhancement squash because it was just all designed to make Cutshaw look good, and he did. And I'm with you. I love that retaliation. What was it? The realization elbow?
Yeah.
I absolutely love that elbow. It looks nasty. And I can believe it can be a knockout blow. Then we got Hollis and Stryker. I mean, Hollis and Skyler confrontation. And then it brings out, what's his name? Oh, gosh. Gunner. Pretty good, pretty well done, and sets up the match for later on. I thought I enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, it's a good just at the show promo. The problem is the sound is never great, so you don't always get everything that they're saying or what's going on exactly, because you can't hear everything in the promo sometimes in these indie shows like this. But yeah, I mean, everything comes across believable, solid enough. I liked Hollis playing up kind of the god complex of John Skyler. And then you mix in Gunner for the, you know, what's the deal? Especially because I think Gunner's gone, pretty much. I think I heard rumors. I don't know if it's 100% true, but he's signed and showing up in Florida here pretty soon, which is
okay, so it's that Gunner. It's not Gunner Miller.
No. Gunner Miller is still toiling away on the indies, at least through SCI.
Gotcha. Okay. And then we got Jason Cade and Villa Veda Scott versus Joe Cruz and Annabelle Rose. I kind of think this is like kind of a waste of a spot for Cade, because I think he has a high ceiling as being a really good worker, fun guy who can, you know, he can either steal a show, or he's a guy who can put on good 3-star matches with his high flying spots and get over. I just thought it was kind of a waste here. I know Cade and Veda, they do work together a lot. I was kind of disappointed in the match, and I felt the mixed gender here they were trying to have like a real match as opposed to like what we saw in Wrestle Circus in a way. And then it kind of fell flat for me. I give it a star at 3/4. What about you?
Yeah, I gave it a star and a quarter. I'm with you. And I actually even think that John Cruise is kind of wasted here. He's actually a pretty decent guy. I'm going to get to see him live here in about 2 weeks in San Diego, so that's going to be fun.
Nice.
Under a mask, but whatever. I won't give away who he is, but he's there. Yeah, Jason Cade's a guy who, again, I've said it a few times, but I feel like Jason Cade is missing something. Veda Scott, this act with him and Veda Scott, I don't know if it's going to give him what he's missing, but he does need some depth of character. And I don't know that just, you know, dressing up, putting his hair in braids and wearing funny glasses is what I need to make that character. But yeah, you know, I think that Angel Rose looked sloppy and dangerous at times, and I think she even got injured in this match. Same goes for Veda Scott, honestly. I've seen Veda Scott be good, so I don't want to dump on her, but at the same time, she was not so great here, and I've also seen her come across like she's untrained at times. So
yeah, I thought the woman really clunky on their exchanges here throughout the match. Yeah, they really brought it down a lot.
Yeah, and I think that John Cruz and Jason Cade can have a pretty good match, but unfortunately, you know, and again, I'm not, you know, I am not saying Veda's never good. I've seen Veda be good. I've never seen Angel Rose before, so I'm not necessarily sure if she's pretty good, but they weren't on the same page here tonight, and they really did come across at sometimes reckless, dangerous, and I think the proof is in the pudding when, you know, I find out later that Angel Rose got herself hurt in this match, so they were reckless, and there was something dangerous to the match.
And what do you think of Elijah Evans IV versus Sugar Dunkington?
I think this was an interesting one, because going into it, Evans is a guy I'm shaky on, and Shug is a guy that I'm more high on, and I think that honestly their performances in the match were kind of the opposite of what I would have expected. Evans, I think, was pretty good for dismissive heel. I think his heat segments could be a lot more dynamic. I think he comes across a little boring at times, and really doesn't really come across like he's super inspired and that he's working hard. Shug, on the other hand, does sell hard, really works hard in the matches, but he got almost nothing from this crowd. I mean, the crowd seemed dead pretty much the whole way through. You can't blame them with, you know, boring offense from the heel that they're going to get super behind the babyface, but a lot of times for Sugar Dunkerton, his charisma carries him through and the crowd gets behind him. Here, it really didn't feel like it happened. Another issue for me with Shug here was it really felt like this is a big-time title match opportunity for him, and from the opening of the match, it felt like his focus was about having fun and joking around, and it wasn't really about wrestling, which is definitely a problem for me. Later on, there's a match I'll reference it, kind of call it back, and point out a spot where someone does a really good job of having a fun, funny spot in a match where that wasn't the focus, was about having fun and making jokes, and Shug really didn't kind of catch that here. I liked the finish from Evans. I liked the cutoff with the big spear, flying elbow drop for the huge near fall, and really got the biggest crowd reaction of the night, so I think that was worked perfectly for that big near fall. Evans kind of mocking Shug before he puts him away with the drill bit was a little, kind of felt like anticlimactic after that big near fall, but whatever, that's the end of the match. And 2.5 star again, and this is not anything special, really.
Yeah, I'm with you. I gave 2.5 stars, and I absolutely loved Evans' flying elbow. Like, that should be his finisher almost, you know, because it was really beautiful. And, I mean, the people bought it as a finisher because they popped for it, you know, or they reacted to it. Like, I mean, yeah, sure, it made a great false finish, but the people believed that it could be a finish. So maybe he might should go that route. Next up, we got the Syndicate versus the Tough Guys. I really enjoyed this. See, the Tough Guys, they worked a pretty southern style. Neither team is, I want to say, super athletic in a way. I mean, Tough Guys are just, they seem like they have good, I thought the psychology here was really well done. Tough Guys working the wrist. We get a nice little shine. Knight in, and he turns the tide because he's so big, and he does it to set up the heat. Nice double team move by the Syndicate. Hot tag to a Brutal Bob, and we get this like a little fun little finish. Like nice little solid 2 3/4 star match. What about you?
Yeah, also gave it 2 3/4. My biggest issues with the match that I think kept it out of the 3-star range is just that Tough Guy Inc. really works a kind of goofy old school heel shtick, and I think that Syndicate needs to be really strongly heels. And it should be only facing teams that work purely babyface. Like, I think that opening stretch, and it was kind of hard to even understand, but they're working over an injured arm of Timmy Lou Retton, which is a little kind of heelish, again, and they're really working that slow-paced grinding. I think they could have turned it up a little bit and played a little bit more straight babyface. Did love the abdominal stretch with the super kick to set up a banana splits pinning combination. I thought that that was a great little spot for Tough Guy Inc. I think that's actually a perfect kind of double team for what their gimmick is. And yeah, I thought that Knight as on the warpath as the big man really put him over strong as a monster. I thought that was great. And then the finish with the rocket launcher senton variation with the ref distraction, and then Timmy comes and hits him, and it looked stupid if you didn't, I guess, get the story that Timmy's supposed to have a cast. And the cast is the reason why that one big hit to the back of the head is what put him down, so that they were able to just get the pin off of that. But as I said, with you, 2¾ star, and I'd say the biggest kind of mortal sin was the opening of the match where Timmy Lou Retton was really selling the towel whip like it was hurting him really bad, and I was just like, oh, come on, that's just too stupid.
Yeah, a little just like eye rolling.
Yeah.
What you make of the James Drake versus Maxwell Jacob Friedman match?
I like Maxwell Jacob Friedman, or was it Feinstein, quite a bit, but I'm also worried that he's getting too much too quick, honestly, and then come to find out some results that just came out last night with him winning a title over in CZW. I was kind of like, oh, man. But, you know, whatever. It's the mid-card title there, but the guy's been working like maybe 2 years, I think they say. But here, I mean, the promo stuff to start out, James Drake, super believable. Feinstein gets great heat from a crowd that's been a little bit dead throughout the match, so I think that that was a good job. But then he offers the handshake to start the pre-match. I'm like, you were like literally just talking shit. Like, why are you even going to pretend like you're going to do the handshake? But, you know, that leads into Drake with the really stiff strikes. And I love, you know me, I'm really kind of a lot of times super critical of kind of walk and brawl. But this match, the around the ring brawl, was really good because of Drake's kind of intensity. He comes across like he's going to hurt you. He's chasing the guy down. Feinstein is able to come back somewhat, but Drake, again, he's not just big bruiser. He's not just fast. He's also smart, so he's a step ahead of him. Cuts him off again. The running senton from Drake looks great, and Feinstein sells it like murder. I love that. And then the big field goal kick, and this is what I'm talking about when I said he hits the field goal kick. He taunts to the crowd about it's good. The crowd pops. It's funny, but it felt like a byproduct of him wanting to kick ass. He's got a charming personality. He can joke around, but he's also in here to fight, and he's not in here just to make jokes and have fun. Like, I felt like the Sugar D match, kind of, that was the issue, is it felt too much like it was all about just having fun. So this is where I say, like, this is how you can do it. You can make it work. Love the post on the shoulder from Feinstein to then set up the arm work. Lots of arm work. I love Drake kind of fights back even from underneath enough to keep his credibility up. And then the big drop kick as his hope spot comeback kind of thing gets a huge pop and just shows the perfectly placed like little high spot. It's a drop kick, but it's a big high spot in this match. The crowd pops for it huge. They react to it like they do for other guys doing somersault planchas and stuff. It's just a drop kick. So that's how a really well-placed, well-timed high spot can really work. Love towards the end as you tease the finish with Feinstein going back to the Fujiwara armbar. I love that attention to detail, especially from a younger kid who's just getting started, that he puts in the work with the arm work early, and then you tease a possible submission finish towards the end with the arm work again. So I thought that was great. Boom, Drake comes back. Drill bit. Big moonsault. Sends the crowd home happy. 3¾ star. I thought this was a lot of fun. Really great match. And just again, shows James Drake is really, really good, and he takes a young kid who obviously has some very good like training already, is already has the kind of great natural instincts, selling everything. So, I mean, this was just a really well put together match all in all. Like, everything, every part of it kind of made sense.
Yeah, I gave it 3¼. I enjoyed it a lot. I like Drake beating on him early, and Drake is such a good worker, really. You know, he has good timing, throws a good punch. He does a lot of the little things really well that you don't really pick up on unless you're watching him, or you watch a lot of him, or you watch a lot of wrestling, and you see him has all these little nuances down. We see Drake takes a miss, and then Feinstein takes and starts working the arm. And overall, this is really good stuff. I thought on the finish, I really didn't think the moonsault was needed. I thought it was like overkill, or why do it? Because he's not a flyer, and just try to, I don't know, I thought it was overkill. I don't think he needs it. I think the drill bit would have been just a perfect fine finisher and been left the crowd happy. I just thought the moonsault just kind of I didn't feel like it meant it, it fit his character really well, and I thought it was a bad character choice for him. Then we got the Ugly Ducklings versus Roscoe Eat Lisa, both two fun teams. I really loved that P spot that opened up. I thought that with the rules where they both lifted their legs and pretending they were peeing on each other, that a lot of it made me laugh. Overall, though, I thought it was a fun match. It was pretty spotty, though. And then post-match, we see the Syndicate attack the Ducklings to set up a program with them. Gave it 2 3/4. It had some fun stuff going on, but then overall, I thought it was just a little spotty and they didn't have a direct narrative. What about you?
Yeah, I liked the opening for the mirror of it, then setting up the kind of the barking on all fours and the leg lift. I thought just like that whole opening stretch was like a good way to have a lot of action, but also kind of a little bit of funniness and stuff like that. I agree with you. Definitely very spotty. Lots of action all over the place. There was the really, really subtle narrative that the Roscoe and Lisa are looking to break up double teams as much as possible. And then finally in the end, they just can't and get overtaken with double teams is what takes them off. You know, it works when you're trying to tell the story of a cohesive unit team like the Ugly Ducklings. But yeah, I mean, there was some stuff like the big dive to the floor from Killjoy. It looked like it didn't touch anybody, like couldn't break an egg with this flip dive as he just lands on the ground, and they all sell it big. But then the big, I think, moonsault from Mikey to the floor looked good. The air raid crash with the assist of the powerbomb from Roscoe at least is just a crazy double team move. I really liked the way that looked. I think I liked it just a slight bit more than you. I gave it 3 star, but I definitely agree with all your kind of attacks on it. I thought that they did a really good job of doing all action, go, 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 especially on a card where there really wasn't anything else that came close to that. I think you can get away with having one match, especially a tag team match with a team like this that's known for this style. You can get away with just having the one that's like that. And actually, if it's executed as well as it is here, I think it works really well on the card.
Cool. What'd you think of Gunner versus John Skyler?
I didn't really like this match, again, mostly because of Skyler's kind of, is he a face, is he not, is he a heel? And then now you have Gunner, and they're telling essentially the same story. I mean, this match was, I weirdly hate to say this match was kind of an angle disguised as a match, as it was more about who's a face, who's a heel, but there was a lot of wrestling in here. There's a lot of good wrestling in here, honestly. But you got Hollis on the outside, you know, trying to get Skyler to hit him, and then telling Gunner to throw more and more power bombs. And yeah, I couldn't get into this because I didn't feel like there wasn't very clear that Skyler was a babyface taking all this heat and the two guys. And then in the end, you know, Gunner turns on Hollis and gets beat anyways. And, you know, I don't know. I wasn't into this. I gave it 2 stars. I didn't really like this match very much.
Okay, I liked it more than you. I gave it 3. I enjoy that they're fighting to the start. We get a little back and forth fight on the floor. I really like Gunner. He uses these leg scissors, and he's working the rib cage. And then I liked how he went to the abdominal stretch, working on the rib cage and using his power moves to rattle the rib cage. So I like that. I like that, what he was doing there. And I thought Skyler hit this really beautiful superplex in this. And I can see where you're coming from, but I enjoyed it more than you. 3 stars. Then we got a Red Dragon versus Henry and Ethan Case. I gotta admit, I mean, on paper, I thought it sounded like a dynamite match, and I thought it would be a possible, you know, low-level match of the year contender on paper. It didn't quite get there. I gave it 3.5 stars. I felt they booked the match too long, and they didn't do a good enough time filling the time, and they did some, like, wanky stalling. Like, I wasn't a big fan of all three guys sitting in the corner, and then Riley trying to be funny by sitting on the top rope of his corner. It was just there in some of those act spots, but there was a lot of good stuff. Like, I really thought that we had a pretty awesome feeling out process. I liked the shine onto Fish. I liked Red Dragon working over Henry, and I liked O'Reilly working on Henry's arm. Case with the hot tag. Red Dragon cuts him off. It just felt like it went too long. It just, I think if they would have compacted this down to 18 minutes, I think it would have worked better for them. What were your thoughts here?
Probably with you that it could have, you could have shaved a lot of time off of this and would have been a lot better. I think I was a lot less forgiving on a lot of this than you. I thought that the stuff with Bobby Fish and Case in the beginning, joking around about streamers and handshakes and getting kicked in the head and taking cheap shots and all this was just not for me. I think it really, you got a dream match situation and you're kind of joking around too much. It's, you know, that just, I just don't like that.
Well, what even made it worse when you think about it is the announcers were talking about how big acts coming to a small pond, how they, how sometimes they treat it as a day off, and here you're getting that joking vibe right off the bat.
Yeah, and it really felt like Red Dragon were treating this like a day off, but it's not even Red Dragon's fault because the main event scene in PWX, especially involving Ethan Case, this is, I mean, joking and fucking around and being lighthearted is what they do. And that's kind of, I mean, you know, this match and this card as a whole is kind of what my issues are with PWX right now, is that I thought there was a lot of great stuff in the undercard. I thought that there was stuff that was booked smart. I think a guy like James Drake comes across as like the star of the show when it just comes to in-ring and everything. But that's all treated as the undercard filler for the main event acts that are like dream matches, weird storylines where you don't know who's the face and heel, and a lot of times just too much comedy, and it's just, it kind of drives me nuts, and this match kind of did a lot of that. You know, Kyle O'Reilly's kind of pinballing around, and it's kind of done in a jokey way, and yeah, just finally he goes and he stops him for taking the last kick, and he just does a bump on his own. And I was just like, Jesus Christ, you know, that's a little bit ridiculous for this setting. Yeah, and one thing I did like was, you know, after the babyfaces or the kind of hometown guys were in control for a while, Kyle and Henry go and they take cheap shots to the cornermen, but Bobby Fish, sticking with the Bobby Fish character here, at least for a moment, he doesn't just take that kind of shit laying down, so he takes out Henry, grabs him, you know, and that sets up the heat for the Red Dragon being on top, and I kind of liked that really fits the Red Dragon narrative, that they don't just let little cheap shots like that go. They're going to take the chance and they're going to come back at you for doing stuff like that. But yeah, I think too much joking, kind of, there was, what is it right here? I mean, it's all four men are down. And then Henry and Kyle O'Reilly are kind of, they kind of go at it like crazy. Henry crawls to the outside just to get tagged right back in. And I was just like, Jesus, that was kind of dumb. I thought it was kind of interesting that all four men are down in the middle of the ring. The other guys go out to the outside to set up for the hot tag. And it's like, you guys were just down selling too. Like, sure, you got down faster, but you were also down selling. They do the four-man sleeper spot. Something wonky kind of happens. Or my TV kind of wonked out on the show, and I missed exactly what happened to get out of the four-man sleeper. They call for Tracing the Dragon, and then Case just gets pinned, and it's over. And, yeah, I didn't like this. I gave it 2.25 star, and I was expecting a lot more from this. And I think Henry and Kyle O'Reilly could have a good match if they were focused, but this match was not focused. It was, you know, the big stars treating it like a spot show where they could just take the night off.
Yeah, the more I listen to you, and the more I feel like I overrated it. I mean, I probably should have gone in the 2.75 range. I honestly went in, watched this thing 4 times trying to want to like it, and because I'm such a Red Dragon fan, and I really couldn't. I think I might have just overrated it because it was Red Dragon. And the more I listen to you, I'm like, I'm with you. I hated this, and the commentary, and it was, you know, kind of, I mean, was kind of, you know, like pointing out like that the Emperor with the clothes off right now, and yeah, you're right. The match just, you know, especially if you compare it to like, I don't know, did you watch the Crash match with the Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks?
No, I didn't see that.
Okay, and that's such a much better match, and that's kind of a dream match, and this was billed as like a dream match, and if you look at the two, one was really good, which was the Crash match, and way better than what we got here and stuff, and they didn't work as long of a match either, and when you think of Red Dragon, you always can like think of the Young Bucks. A lot of times they're paired together because they the long Ring of Honor feud they had, but yeah, here it was just such a disappointing match.
Well, you talk about that, but the Lucha Brothers are like, they deliver in those dream match kind of settings, because they did the Fight Club Pro Tag Team Tournament, and they made it all the way to the finals, and every one of their matches, I mean, they gave it all, and they were going against, like, FSU, CCK, and I think their first match was against, like, Callahan and Pete Dunne, and it's like, every one of those matches, they gave it all, but here, Red Dragon, this one match, they kind of phoned it in.
Yeah, every time I see them, I mean, I think a lot of it helps because they have good chemistry together, the Lucha Brothers, and I think Phoenix is a really good worker, while I think Pentagon Jr., or whatever you want to call him now,
yeah,
he has a tendency to can coast on his personality and stuff, so his singles matches don't always live up, but Phoenix is able to cover him in the ring, and then they complement each other really well as a tag team, and I think they're one of the better tag teams going today and stuff. Like, you know, I mean, they're an act that easily would be over in the WWE right now doing their shtick that they do right now.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And stuff. So overall, man, what do you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
Like I said, I mean, the undercard is so strong, it's hard to give it a thumbs down. But the main event stuff and the stuff that's treated like it's supposed to be the most important stuff in PWX a lot of times just really underdelivers, or is treated as like comedy is fine on the top. And it is kind of that 2017 modern wrestling where everything can be comedy and high spots and that's okay. But it doesn't work for me. So this is about as dangerously close to thumbs down as they're getting. And I could definitely, I mean, I've given PWX thumbs down on shows before, but this is really close to being thumbs down. But I'll say thumbs in the middle, especially for James Drake.
Yeah, I'm going thumbs in the middle. I thought it was a clear thumbs in the middle. Nothing too horrendous out there. Maybe had one match that, I mean, I thought there was like one squash and then one match that flat out stunk. But everything else was right at the 3-star range for the most part. So I'm going to stick with a thumbs in the middle. But yeah, I'm closer to a thumbs down than a thumbs up, I'll tell you that. And all that noise. So why don't we take a break here? And when we come back, we'll be looking at CWF Mid-Atlantic and NXT.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we are back. We're back. We're looking at CWF Mid-Atlantic, and we are looking at Battle Bowl right now is what they're doing here. And it was a pretty interesting show. And it's kind of funny. It's like I talked about it, that I'm going to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame next weekend. And a team that I first saw on CWF Mid-Atlantic is headlining the show when the the local show I'm going to down there, and that's the Dirty Blondes are going to be working it. So I'm kind of excited to see what they can do when they're giving a little longer time. And I'm getting a vibe that the Blondes like wrestling in front of a lot of these veterans. Like here, it's going to be the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, so there's going to be a lot of established old school talent. I know they're working today. They're working the CWF, which is the Continental Fan Festival, going on right now in I think it's Pensacola, if I'm not, or it's Alabama, one of the two, and they're working that show also. So they might get one of the things I think they enjoy doing is working in front of old school wrestlers. So I'm looking forward to that. I never would think I'd see the Dirty Blondes live in Texas, seeing they're mostly known for working the Carolinas. You know?
Yeah. No. And well, actually, the Dirty Blondes are getting out here too. Yeah, they've worked some, I think they worked the PCW, one of the kind of SoCal indies that's making some waves, getting known. They're the guys that are booking, like, RVD pretty regularly, but they brought them in. I think, and they had some shots with ROH, so I think the Dirty Blondes are getting a little bit of a rep for being, I mean, they're definitely good hands, but, you know, the problem is they're not much to look at, if we're perfectly honest, but they're good workers, so, you know, hopefully they start getting some more respect. And obviously, if they're working these higher profile gigs, like in front of the legends, like you said, and at the Hall of Fame here, hopefully they start even getting out there even more.
Yeah, exactly. So let's look at CWF Battle Ball. We open up with Otto Schwantz and Eric Andrews, and I really like this as a title defense. Schwantz is, he's been established because he had that great match with Trevor Lee, and they've really gotten him over as this, like, killing amateur wrestler thing. I don't know about the mask. I thought that was a little weird, and I thought some of his ooh-ooh mannerisms was a little awkward, but I still enjoyed the match. I loved him dominating. I totally loved the banana peel finish of Andrews still keeping on to his title. I thought we got another really fun title defense here, and it told a great story of he was out over his head, overmatched, but he was able to keep his cool and pull off the upset with the banana peel finish, man. I really enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, no, and I think they did a great job, especially because you gotta build some credibility in the TV champ. You can't always do the time limit, save the title that way, but also you got to pick and choose, you know, which guys he goes over because of the way that this character works. And I think Otto Schwantz is a great guy for him to get a fluky win on, because Otto Schwantz will, you know, he'll still stay credible. He didn't really beat him, he just snuck away, but he did win, he did get the pin, so it does make him look good in that regard. And again, I think I agree with you pretty much on everything that you said there. Otto Schwantz, the only problem can kind of be he can get a little too sticky, but the wrestling machine character works really well for him. And And I thought that this was a good opener for the match, and again, kind of lends credibility to Eric Andrews going forward.
Yeah, then we have Ethan Sharp out, and they do the go to the thing, and they draw his partner, and it's Mitch Connor, and it's versus him and Sis. What would you make of this, and what do you make of the whole entire Sharp shtick going on?
I like the opening stuff with Sharp. Mitch comes out, and he's instantly, I mean, they make no bones about it, and I explain like I'm five. I love it sometimes where you just go like, let's just make this very obvious. So Mitch comes out and he's instantly, you don't boss me around, and he's shoving him. And I'm just like, okay, so this is an odd couple team that doesn't get along perfect. Mitch refuses to fight a woman, so he won't come in and do anything with Sis. So I think that worked really well. And again, I think Easton Sharp, when he does hit his couple, he peppers in a couple legitimate looking shots here and there and gets going. He looks like if he could focus, if he could do something, he could maybe be a threat down the line. So I think that was good. And you know, this was storytelling match 101, and him and Sis get the win, and they take advantage of the situation, and Sharp and Mitch can't get on the same page, and Ethan Sharp just gets more and more heat by, you know, talking shit to the crowd and trying to get out of the match and trying to blame it on Mitch Connor for him not winning. And the whole thing really worked for me in just old school kind of heel 101.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. I thought Sharp was the funnest part of the whole entire thing because I thought he was great. I loved him yelling at him and Sis and all his mannerisms and the odd couple of him and Mitch Connor I thought worked real well. And that's what Battle Bowl is about. You're supposed to set up these type of things that you would not normally see. And so it's fun when it plays out. And you played out really well here. Then we get a Luke Grimes promo. Man, I gotta say, I thought this was pretty stiff, but I like the idea of his promo. What about you?
Same. Pretty pretty dry for a guy who talks about being handpicked by Steve Corino, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I was like, ouch. When he first started, it seemed like he looked like he wanted to be anywhere but cutting that promo.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not sure if that's a fair to say, but he didn't seem natural, let's put it that way. But I liked the idea of what the promo stood for.
Yeah, no,
then
exactly.
Then we get Dirty Daddy and Eric Royal, and I really, you know, I thought this was a fun little bout, you know. It wasn't, you know, didn't reinvent the wheel. I mean, it was all about, you know, Daddy got a nice little shine, but eventually Royal is just too dominating. And Royal, man, you know, Daddy has some charisma, but Royal, man, just, it's really weird when, because we usually in the matches, Daddy's usually talk about Dirty Daddy and his charisma, but Royal just was so charismatic, he just eclipsed him here. But fun little bout. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, Eric Royal jaws with the crowd to a level with which I almost start to get worried that he's going to get in trouble. Like, he talks shit to the crowd so much that I'm like, whoa, he needs to calm down. He's going to say the wrong thing, or he's going to piss off the wrong person or something. But it's so good. It gets so much heat. He's always fun and funny. But then when he turns it on, man, he's a fucking killer. And to see him here as the big bully, I mean, he's one of the best bullies going now that, you know, Chris Hero is gone. But, like, to see him, how good of a bully he is, and then also he plays this kind of monster, undefeatable face in Nova. The guy can, like, switch back and forth, play those both characters really well, and it's just kind of surprising. I love Daddy almost catches a sneaky sunset flip to get the pin on the end, but no, that's not it. And then Royal comes out of nowhere with that just massive tackle, sends him into orbit and gets the win. And yeah, Royal is honestly kind of one of the best kept secrets of independent wrestling right now, as it feels like no one really talks about him too much except for the people in our circles who are watching CWF and maybe Nova Pro. But it's kind of crazy just how good he is.
His character work right now is top notch, and I've never seen him live. So, I mean, when I head down to Scenic City this year, I mean, there's a lot of people to look forward to on that in the card. But I think I might be most looking forward to seeing how Eric Royal really be in a live crowd setting with him, because he feels like he's a guy who I'm going to get all over and yell and scream and boo my brains out. So I'm so looking forward to that. Then we get this Timmy Danger promo along with a Sandwich Squad promo. What you make of these promos, man?
Timmy Danger is a bit over the top, obvious, but like at least he has a character, you know. And it's funny. It's feast or famine on this show with the new guys. The first guy, it's like, I kind of get what they're trying to make his character be, but it wasn't coming through. And then this one, Timmy Danger, it's like instantly, oh, I get what this character is, but I don't know if I necessarily am super into it, so we'll see how it goes from there. The Sandwich Squad promo to the crowd is like just, you know, super endearing. You can't believe it almost when you see these guys and they never talk. You don't expect much from them, but Biggs just really comes across believable and like a guy that you want to root for and care about coming off of this. And then, of course, I was dumb enough to, after this, go onto his Twitter and see a picture of his like newborn baby. And I just, my heart melted and I completely fell in love with this guy after this episode and that combined. I'm like, oh man, I like actually really care about Biggs now.
I'm with you. I first of all, let me start off. I enjoy the Timmy Danger promo. I sometimes like over the top heels, especially when they get their kind of comeuppance. And so I kind of dug it, and he instantly healed himself to the crowd. So I thought it was effective in that role. Biggs's promo, I'm like, wow, this guy can talk and make you care about what he's talking about. I thought he was so incredible. Yeah, I tweeted out about how awesome that promo was. You know, it wasn't like, you know, Hard Times or anything like a Dusty Rhodes, you know, all-time great promo. But what he did, you see, it's kind of, you weren't expecting it, and it was so good, and made you feel good. Which led us to the Sandwich Squad versus Timmy Danger and Nick Richards. What were your thoughts here?
I thought Nick Richards looked good for, you know, while he's in there, kind of mixing it up with the Sandwich Squad, trying to fight back as much as he can. But, you know, I mean, he takes a real ass whooping. He's got two big, bad behemoths just going at him. It's just a matter of time before it's going to, you know, the wheels are going to come off the wagon, as it were. And and that's what you expect, but he fights back valiantly, he puts in everything he can, and then finally he's able to get to the corner and look for the tag, and Danger hits the floor and grabs the hairspray, and he sprays his hair before he gets tagged in. And then when he does, you know, when he does finally get tagged in, he's just murdered instantly, and it's like, oh my god, all of that hard work that Richards did was for nothing. And it just, it really, it almost has a deflating feel, but it's also satisfying for storytelling. You know what I mean? Like, it kind of has both, where Richards worked so hard, and then to see him just lose it, you're like, you're so pissed off for him in this setting. At least I was. I was just like, I cannot believe this fucker did this. So now there's just so much heat on Timmy Danger, and I'm like excited for, hopefully they have a big match, you know, pretty soon here, that they can just, like, Richards can kind of get his comeuppance and get something back from this guy for what he did here.
Yeah, I know. I enjoyed this match. I gave it 3 stars. I liked Big and Richards. Biggs and Richards just really going off, going after it early, but Biggs' size is too much for Nick. I love Danger just talking shit on the outside and in the ring. The squad was just using its size to its advantage. Nick Richards threw this absolutely beautiful chop that I was like, wow. I mean, it just looked beautiful. Biggs using headbutts. I like Danger trying to do the chopping of the leg and working Biggs' leg. There's a lot to like about here, man. 3 stars, really good, fun match. And then we get Roy Wilkins versus the filmmaker, is it? What is it?
The filmmaker.
Filmmaker, that's right. Oh, man. It was what it was. Wilkins tries to carry him, it seems like. Filmmaker was okay. But, man, anytime I get to see the golf swing, I'm happy. And Wilkins going over, I was happy. But, you know, like everyone else, I was so hoping, when it was technical rules, I was hoping we're going to see Wilkins and Kane go after it. Were you kind of rooting for that?
Yeah, that would have been the dream setting, I think, or the dream situation, probably.
But hey, maybe down the line. What do you think of the match?
The match itself was good. I think it was, again, it was more story than anything else. With Wilkins, kind of, you'd expect this is his match, but the second that Movie Mike is able to, you know, give him any kind of pushback, he instantly wants to take advantage of the rules and start cheating. And I love ramming him into the apron, and the commentary even saying he better watch out because this could get him disqualified. You know, this isn't technical rules and what he's doing here. And the golf swing, great, as they're, you know, technically not a close fist strike, and gets the win there. And I thought, yeah, it was good stuff. It really, you know, kind of an enhancement match for Wilkins, and I think he looked good here. And again, some guys just take enhancement matches like this, and all they do is just eat the guys up. I think that doing the technical wrestling rules, doing the frustration on Wilkins and going to kind of underhanded tactics, really you get more out of an enhancement man doing that than you do just kind of destroying a guy. So it's, you know, it's smartly done.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And then we get a Kane Justice promo, and he was such a little slimeball prick here. Absolutely loved it. The crowd wants to turn him babyface, but he's working really hard to be heel. And I think the whole angle with Cecil Scott helped him stay heel longer, because people love Cecil and really like him, and he has that likability about him. And Kane Justice comes across as like this prick bully, opportunistic bully, working with Cecil. So I'm really looking forward to their match. What do you make of the promo?
Yeah, exactly with you. I agree with you. I think a lot of the crowd is definitely getting behind him just because of how good he is, and you kind of want to root a winner. But Cecil makes sure to continue to be a complete, or not Cecil, but Kane continues to be just a complete little shit, and it makes it really easy to boo him. And you're right that Cecil Scott's issues with him definitely help add a lot to the match.
Then we got Kane Justice versus Luke Grimes and Keith Mack versus Snooty Fox, Vlad, and Cecil. Sets it up so he's the man gets picked. Love that, a little angle, nice little wrinkle into the match. I really didn't see it coming. I would have saw it like accidental, but I kind of like how he stacked the deck. It really wasn't much of a match. It was kind of pretty much short, but it was all about the background of Kane and Cecil. You see Kane ends up running away, so Scott has his moment. But, you know, they're going to, you know, this is not over and it's going to continue. And it was a good standing tall moment for him. But, you know, Justice is going to get his revenge. And I liked how they prolonged the story, especially with the six-man function, you know, so they didn't have to give away their match yet because they barely touched. But what we did was great. What'd you make of this?
Yeah, no, and as you said, the Cecil gets the big super kick, so you at least got something, but Kane's gone. I did love that it was like a little touch, but I kind of thought it was great that Cecil got in, but he didn't get in with Kane. I don't remember who. I think it was probably with Luke Grimes. And rather than kind of like mess around and wrestle or do anything, he's in here for one thing, and he makes it very clear. So the second he's in there with Luke Grimes, he's just attacking his eyes. He's like, fuck it, I'm not in here to wrestle you. I'm not in here to prove that I can still be an active wrestler. I'm in here because of my personal issues with that one guy. So if he's not here, I'm just going to do whatever. You know, he's taking the low road just to get the fight over with. I kind of love that for the psychology of the whole situation. I just thought that was great. Match was, you know, as you said, fast, hot-paced action built around this one big story. And I think you teased a lot of good stuff. Snooty wins with the spear, so that's important for Snooty going forward, being kind of big and unstoppable. So, you know, it was a fine main event trios match that didn't give anything away, but also didn't feel like a letdown. So I think that that's really important, and that's something that CWF has to do a lot, just because they do, you know, tape one show and turn it into three or four episodes of TV. I think you need to have matches like this that can be the main event that feel satisfying, but don't kind of give everything away.
Yeah, and they had the crowd was totally into it, super heated. And it's just great. Sometimes I wish the WWE would do this when they're building up their ways into WrestleMania sometimes, or some of their bigger matches. Like, I mean, because these guys are constantly having to wrestle each other or do something. Like, throw a six-man out there, man, and barely have them touch. You know, they don't have to touch, you know. Have the heel be a, like, Kane and hide and be opportunistic and hit his moments, you know. I thought this was brilliant and a great way where they definitely didn't give anything away of what they could possibly put out together when they wrestle. I thought it was brilliantly booked and laid out, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, no, definitely well done. And definitely hats off again to CWF. It's like, we've talked about it, even when they're not peaking, it's a really enjoyable show.
Yeah, exactly. You know, right now we're in the Battle Bowl section, and I like how they're tied things into Scenic City with this, along with the matches earlier. So I'm pretty excited. Next up, we got some NXT action, and we open up with Aleister Black versus who is it? Cesar Bononi?
Yeah, Cesar Bononi, whatever it is.
Yeah, I thought Black looked fantastic here. And, I mean, beating a guy who looked on paper, cosmetically, he looked great, Bononi. We got a couple few minutes, but then freaking Black with the blackout.
Yes.
I thought was really, really well done. I think he's looking better here in NXT than he did on the European independent scene and even in Evolve and stuff. I think he's looking like a million bucks. Looks like his timing is looking a lot better. I'm not sure if that's something they worked with him on here, because that was one of my always problems with sometimes his kicks, just the timing seemed off. But he's so far so good, man. What did you think?
Yeah, I think you know, he gets to be at his peak at all times. Spent most of his time training. Not having to worry about travel and everything else. It's going to really help with his crispness and his on-pointness. But, yeah, when I saw him come to the ring, and then I don't know if you saw that he was also on Superstars against Brian Myers. He showed up, or whatever.
Oh, I did not know that, no.
Yeah, he showed up for the UK tour. He showed up on Superstars or Main Event or whatever it is to squash Brian Myers. And just his intro and everything that they're doing, I'm just like, with all of the guys, Zack Sabre Jr., Marty Scurll, Will Ospreay, Mark Haskins, I'm so shocked that it really does feel right now like the guy out of this whole hot period that the UK indies have become, that the biggest star is going to be Aleister Black. Like, Tommy End is going to be the guy that really becomes something, because it just feels like they're all in on the guy, and he's knocking it out of the park every time. I mean, he's not doing much, but it all looks fucking great, and the crowd's getting behind it, and they're just putting so much into this guy, and it's just working. And I'm really kind of shocked just how well they can do it, because you see them do it wrong so often.
Another thing with him, though, which, I mean, separates him from the rest of the UK scene right now, is they're not treating him like he's part of the UK talent, in a way.
Right. He is his own thing. He's not
like
just
all
part
the other
group.
Guys are UK talent, yeah, driven, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, exactly. I just meant in general. I don't even mean with the guys that WWE's necessarily even picking up, but I just mean in general, when you looked at this UK scene get super hot, Tommy Ann, I mean, he's a guy I always really liked, but I think he was always seen as, you know, third or fourth down the card. I mean, he was WXW champion, stuff like that, but I really never think that he was looked at as a top-level Euro guy. I think, you know, as I said, Zack Sabre Jr., Marty Scurll, Ospreay, those guys, you know, were looked at the top guys. And now Tommy End is looking like the guy who's going to come out as the big deal.
Yeah, I know. You're absolutely right. He has all the potential in the world to do it. And then we get an Ember Moon update. She spoke, you know, she didn't come across like that great of a baby face here.
Nope.
More of a whiner. Well, what'd you make of it?
Yeah, this is, and I don't know, I'm hearing rumors that this is a work and that it's not real and whatever. We'll see what ends up happening, but I think, you know, this just isn't, I hope this isn't a work, because if it is, then they're not pulling it off. And then if it is a real injury, then they're also not really making her look too great on it. But, you know, what can you do sometimes? Injuries happen. But if this was a plan, they really didn't pull it off properly.
And then we get a surprise Pete Dunne profile on NXT television. I mean, I know they're hyping the UK tournament, but this is almost like out of the Vince McMahon play back in the 80s where, yeah, I know Dunne's already under contract and all, but it does kind of seem like they're, you know, like, ooh, look at this guy, and when we're ready to poach him full-time, we're going to poach him full-time, and there's nothing you guys can do about it vibe from it, which I alienated some people on Twitter about it. But if you don't know the history, man, this is what Vince did. He put on when he had Georgia Television, the guys he was about to poach, he put on there, and then they became WWE exclusive. And that's good. You know, good for the WWE, good for the talent, because they're going to be making more money, but not so good for the promoters, you know, because they're not going to have access to them anymore. So what's your feeling on all that?
Does everybody, the people who are defending or kind of trying to argue that there's nothing to that and this and that and everything's going to be fine. I mean, you see the posts, just recently posts from Jim Smallman, and he's trying, you know, everything's fine and wrestling's not like it used to be. Well, it wasn't too long ago that they pulled Pete Dunne from cards because they were going to be on Flow Slam.
Yeah.
And they said that all the guys that supposedly were going to be on the FCP shows, the Fight Club Pro shows that were under WWE, you know, contracts, weren't going to be allowed to be on Vimeo. And now they're letting it happen again. They're, oh, if you're a friendly promotion, then you get, you know, you can put our guys on VOD. You can do whatever you want. Even guys are on Flow Slam, it's fine. But it's just going to take whatever they decide that they're done doing that. You know, and they can switch right back to saying no, and they're under our contract, and they don't have to be on your video on demand. They can even say, and in fact, we need you to go back and pull the stuff that's already on there that we had said was okay from before, because now it's not okay. You know, and they could do all this, and it's just like, I don't know why people automatically, oh, it's fine, everything's cool. It's like, if everything was cool, then they would give it to you in writing, and they would say, it's okay for you to use them however you want.
And it's saying, a take I hear is like, well, they're in business with the WWE. I'm like, it's kind of like, no, the WWE treats them how they want to treat them, and they, I mean, it's a tough position for the promoter to be in, because either you go with the WWE and try to not make waves, or you're fucked and you make waves. So, I mean, it's like a no-win situation. That bottom line is the WWE is the dominating promotion. They'll take the talent when they want, and that's how it is. That's how it is with not just WWE, but that's how the world works. When usually a bigger company wants something, or like even in baseball or football, when the bigger named town or the big city wants to go after a free agent, they're the ones who usually end up with it. I mean, unless there's a background behind it or something like that. But that's how it is. I mean, the big fish, the big guy, the big conglomeration usually wins, and the little guy usually gets squeezed out. I mean, that's kind of how it is. I get a chuckle out of people thinking that this is a great deal for these guys, because bottom line is the WWE is using them, and in my opinion, using them until they're ready, when they don't need them anymore, and then they'll wash their hands of them.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. If it was such a cool situation and everything is great, I mean, it would be in writing. But as of right now, the writing on the wall, the writing on the contract, the real letter of the law is WWE has the right to say you can't use our guys on your, you know, on your, yeah, your streams, on your VODs, on your whatever. And sure, it's like it's to their whim now. And when you're at the mercy of someone, you're not in control. You're not in a power situation, and none of them are. So working with, having a partnership with someone is a lot different than, you know, being allowed to pick up their scraps when they let you.
Yeah, or making you wear a suit when you never wore a suit before in your life.
Hey, he's still punk rock.
You know, so, I mean, but to each their own. Yeah, everyone's allowed to have their own opinion, I feel, but I think some people are, I don't think they just end up not reading the whole entire, the landscape properly, because to me it's pretty cut and dry that once the WWE is done with you, they can get rid of you. I've heard the argument, oh, but now they know they need territories to work. I go, okay, let me explain something. Indie wrestling isn't the territories, really. These guys run once a month, if that, for most of them. So they're an independent, and they're not developing talent by a week to week basis. But the WWE does realize that talent, they do realize that talent needs other places to work, and they'll allow indie wrestling. I don't think indie wrestling will ever die, because they will just create more talent at the WWF if they want them. We'll poach, so it's there. But I don't think, I don't think the WWE is trying to drive them out of business per se. I think the WWE, though, when they want their talent, will take them, and they won't share it. Like right now, they just took Drew McIntyre from Evolve. I mean, he's not even a UK thing, but they just took him from Evolve, and now Evolve is not going to be using him going forward anymore. I mean, they got to have a little bit of closure, and that was about it. And now that, you know, that's how it works, and that's how it is.
You don't have to go that far back to just look at Gabe and ask him how that's treating him right now, because he fell out of favor with the WWE, and it's not that nice for him right now, you know. And I mean, for the people who are defending all the European companies that this is a smart move for them, I mean, realistically, just look at Gabe. And this is right now. You can't say times are different, because this is literally happening right now.
Yeah, they're done is being profiled on the NXT television, because I think after the UK, they're doing the UK special, I see Dunn being in NXT pretty damn shortly, if they're putting him on their television.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know? Then we got Ruby Riott. And we get this Nikki Cross stuff. And, you know, I thought this was well done. What about you?
Yeah, I liked the Ruby Riott thing. I heard people talking bad about it, but I thought it was good. It kind of profiles her somewhat. And yeah, sure, it's not super in-depth about her personality, but whatever. It's just starting to get to know her. Now, the Nikki Cross stuff, this was fucking
real good.
Great.
Yeah.
The production equipment, she won't answer questions. She's just talking about Ruby and Asuka, and she wants the title, and she's going to win at TakeOver. And yeah, that was good stuff. I mean, this really showed you that, I mean, you can't have one without the other, though. Like, the Ruby Riott thing, yes, was like, oh, this is just cookie cutter. Hey, I like to get tattoos. Hey, this is me. But if all of your stuff was like the Nikki Cross thing, then the Nikki Cross thing wouldn't stand out. But because a lot of your stuff is just whatever cookie cutter, when you do something special, it makes it stand out even more.
Yeah, and Nikki Cross, she's so good at playing her character. That's one of the best things about her. You believe in what she's selling to you, and that's because of her character work and stuff. And she's just so darn good at it. That's the thing, you know. Then we get this vignette. And if I miss anything, holler at me. I had my neighbor came over while I was trying to do this and stuff, so I might miss some stuff. What you make of this like vignette or the coming soon of this mystery person?
Oh, is that it's the Patrick Clark thing, right?
No, there was a different one. There was like a black, just a blacked out silhouette of somebody. I know the Patrick Clark one, they're playing like the Prince fake music. This was a different one. Did you?
Maybe I missed it.
Okay. Then we get a. I have no idea who it is. I thought they were there was a. It was a girl they were pushing. But unless I'm getting confused, and it is the Patrick Clark thing, but I didn't think it was. All right. Then we got a McIntyre promo, and then either who is it, Murphy or Blake comes out, and they're setting up a match. I thought it was funny. What about you?
Yeah, it's fine. And Blake's a good enough hand. Actually, a guy I think who has maybe had more in the tank, but whatever. He's a solid worker, and he'll make McIntyre look good. Not that McIntyre needs a lot of help.
No. I like their tag team. I was like, I don't know. I understand. Maybe don't think they were going to be a top thing, but I liked them where they could. I thought they were good heels, and it was so weird that they broke them up because now they kind of have they're aimless, you know. Then we get a DIY promo, and it was a typical DIY promo, which set us up to DIY versus Sabatino and who was the other guy?
Riddick Moss.
Yeah, what'd you make of all this?
The match was decent. I thought that Riddick Moss and Sabatino looked good when they were in. They actually have really gotten their character stuff down. It really helps their in-ring have a focus because they know what they're looking for. So I think that that did good. Obviously, Gargano and Ciampa are just two of the best. They're just, I mean, they're twin balls of fire when they need to be. They both can bump and sell their asses off. So that all works. But yeah, I thought that this was almost, even though it's a loss for them, I think it's almost a coming out party for Sabatino, for Sabatelli and Moss as guys who have something there. Because I think a lot of people were writing them off as, you know, just body guys. Oh, they're ex-football players. But here, I think they showed good aggression. They showed good focus, teamwork. Nice looking near falls at times. So this really was a good match. And I mean, it could be DIY. It could be the DIY are just that damn good that they can make anybody look great. But I don't know that that's 100% the case. I think we might have something in this team going forward.
Yeah, and then we got the Authors of Pain come out with Paul Ellering, and man, it's this gets set up for a ladder match. This is interesting. What about you?
Yeah, I like the ladder match concept. I mean, it really makes it feel like DIY has to win, because how do these big fucking behemoths climb up that ladder and get the belts? But at the same time, I could see them win, I could see them lose, I could see they're already ready to put Authors of Pain on the main roster even, you know, that wouldn't even shock me, and so give the belts back to DIY to stabilize the division again, but who knows? I mean, this is very interesting and kind of a nice wrinkle for that match.
Right, and then we got Hero here, and he sets up a match versus Bobby Roode for next week. No, sets up a match between the winner of Strong and Itami. What did he do?
What does he do? He says, I can't even remember. Yeah, it's like I don't know. He puts over a lot of guys, and I don't even know exactly what he was saying. He said that he went for the title, he didn't get it. Now he's gonna have to work his way back up, kind of.
Yeah, okay.
And he's putting over how other guys around are, like, already kind of jumped it back ahead of him, even. And then almost shows up, and I feel like that's where they're going for the next match.
What do you feel about this Hero run? I mean, or a Cassius Ohno run? I mean, I've heard a lot of online saying people they're wasting them and stuff, but I think we're both on the same opinion where they're using him more as a player coach here, right?
Yeah, he's got the spot that everyone wanted. I mean, imagine they had given this job to James Storm when he said he wanted to be the player coach. I mean, who are you going to give this spot to other than Chris Hero? I mean, who else deserves it more than Chris Hero to be the guy who's training guys, explaining how stuff works, but then he's also getting in that ring and showing them how it's done? He's got enough behind him still. He's got enough legs that he can be believable. He can churn out solid matches. I mean, I don't know that it's there, and I don't know that Hero needs to be on the road 7 days a week, you know what I mean? Like 5 days a week, whatever it is for the WWE guys, honestly. I mean, towards the middle of his epic all-time run in 2016, he had some big-time setbacks. He took a couple weeks off here and there, and that was just the indie grind. Imagine he's doing the full-time grind for years at a time. I don't necessarily know that he can handle it, especially when, I mean, I've said it plenty of times on this podcast already, but Chris Hero is not just a better wrestler than almost all the other wrestlers out there. He's also a better wrestling fan than most of the wrestling fans out there. He's a better wrestling mind. And rather than keeping that all to himself in his matches, this is a chance for him to, you know, kind of spread that to the future of WWE and to the future of wrestling in general. And I kind of see that as a really positive thing. And after all that is said and done, let's not all stand around and cry for Chris Hero, because he is dating Rachel Ellering, so I think he's doing all right.
Exactly. And that leads us to Strong and Atomi cutting promos, and we got a Roddy Strong versus Atomi match, and I absolutely love this match. It was Atomi working the midsection, and Strong's working the arm. It was all hard-hitting, Strong going to the back, and they built and built and built, and finally, Atomi finished them off, man. I thought it was like a good 3.5, 3¾-star match. Really good stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. Close, probably in that range. Possibly even 4-star. And one thing that really hit me for this match is you talk about the build and build and the work and the focus and just the times where they turn it up and they're going crazy balls to the walls and then they're going back, but it's rooted in story and logic. And this was... You know, I mean, these guys did have a match in the time period, but I'm not even talking specifically about that match. But this was early 2000s ROH all grown up. Like, this is taking those ideas that they picked up from Japan and they picked up from, you know, King's Road style and really maturing it and kind of flavoring it for the modern day, adding in some sanity to it. It's not just all head drops and craziness. Making it so you could do a match like this 3 nights a week. And, you know, and then also saving enough stuff that you can turn it up for a big-time main event, pay-per-view setting. I mean, this was it. This was taking that style and turning it into the mainstream, and it's like, oh, wow, like it actually happened, which is, like, is kind of a weird thing to think about, like, the revolution of wrestling, the way that it goes in generations and it grows, but it's like these guys went from being the indie guys who killed themselves for no money to being like, oh, okay, like, this is now kind of almost the mainstream of wrestling. It's really kind of cool to see that that happened within my lifetime, because I'm just kind of getting to the age where I can kind of see that happen, like, actually right in front of me from people that I've been following for, you know, almost their entire careers. The match itself, I mean, the action, the body scissors, I thought was used really well for attacking the back and working over Atomi on the arms. I mean, yeah. And when you got Roderick Strong and the back attacks and all the backbreakers and the stronghold and everything he does, it just always works. And hard hitting, hard strikes from Atomi is great. And I still, every time, am just a mark for Roderick Strong still doing the angle slam, just because of that one little spot on SmackDown years and years ago. It not only does it fit him, but I just love that callback is there for the end of time. I just think that that's great. And I'm with you. I can see this 3.5, 3¾, definitely in that range.
What do you think might maybe Atomi's best match in NXT?
I could definitely see that's probably it, because he hasn't had a lot of other great matches. This was probably his best match in NXT.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm trying to think. You know, I want to say I think I saw these guys work in San Antonio, and I thought they had a kick-ass match, too.
Well, I was trying to think, because I know that Atomi had a really good match with Tyler Breeze. But yeah, I don't think it was as good as this.
No, it wasn't as good as this. This was, you know, this is a Roddy Strong, Strong style match. You know, different, totally different. Awesome. Man, another good NXT show. I can't complain. I liked how they're building stuff. And when you get a good strong main event like that, you really can't complain. Am I right?
Yeah. No. I mean, this is what we talk about when they have the big main events on here that people kind of, I think, used to think we're on every episode of NXT, every match was like this, and it's like, no, it's always been that it's few and far between, but when they come, like, this one was, like, superb.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, on that note, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be looking at Progress Wrestling.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliot's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And man, we're back and we're looking at Progress Wrestling. I gotta tell you, man, I thought this was one of the best Progress shows I've ever seen. What about you?
Totally agree. I mean, almost every match delivered pretty strongly.
And it was without without the big three, really. Without Ospreay, Marty Scurll, or Zack Sabre Jr., who you, again, could say are the three biggest stars in the UK, huh?
Yeah, no. And instead, you've got really solid replacements for, you know, in every way. You've got guys coming up from the Projo that are really, I mean, guys and girls coming up from the Projo that are really starting to, you know, put it all together. And they even bring in a UK scene stalwart that really made me happy. So, you know, good stuff all around.
Yeah, we open up with James Drake versus Eddie Dennis, and I didn't give this a star rating. I don't know about you on the Roku. I don't know if there was a cut or I got some buffering issues on this match. It felt like something was cut out of the match, and I'm not sure. But we, did you get that at all?
I don't know that I noticed, but it would make sense for why I was kind of down on the match, that maybe I was missing something that should have happened.
Yeah, I couldn't rate it because I felt like I was getting too many cuts because it happened like twice. And I liked early on, we see Drake with a suplex on the floor, which was really nice. Drake all over him early on. We see Dennis with a comeback. And then, yeah, then I have all these notes about it. It seemed like we got a clip here and then a clip there. So I just couldn't get into the match because of the two little buffering issues. So I didn't give it a rating. Maybe you can explain it better then.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, to me, like, the match opened up. I liked Drake's aggression. I liked the kind of meanness that he was showing. And there's just something, though, about him that even his best attacks, he just doesn't engage the crowd. And it's kind of interesting with Eddie Dennis here, who's, like, someone that the people love a lot. And he's still, Drake can't seem to get the crowd really into him. Drake does the, like, frustrated, I can't believe he kicked out thing, and it feels like it's just too early in the match. I did like he looks like he's going for grit your teeth and he misses it. Dennis starts to kind of dominate him after that. And I think that there was a part where Drake stays on his knees while Dennis is just kind of like fucking him up that like looked really bad. And just kind of like, it looked like he should have been kind of fighting to get up and he was just staying down on his knees, throwing strikes upwards, just getting beat up. Dennis takes a second to like get caught up with the referee and then gets hit with the Mayhem DDT for the pin and really felt like nothing. And there was a couple little things in here that I didn't like, and I gave it a star and a half. And, you know, maybe it was edited. Maybe there were some issues and that's what kind of threw it off for me and I just didn't notice it. But it felt like the match was definitely really missing something and the crowd never really got into it.
What do you think of Laura DiMatteo versus Alex Windsor?
I actually like this a lot. Laura starting out with the plucky shine, but she's working like the wrestling style is good. I love her going for the suicide dive and Windsor cuts her off with the big forearm. And then now Windsor is control and she's just beating the shit out of her. And because she's smaller, it makes it look even better. I did like Windsor's kind of stretching her out with the surfboard stretch and the camera perfectly shot it so you could see the agony on Laura's face as she then gets stomped into the mat. I thought that was great. I felt like Laura was a little bit too, like, my health meter is completely filled back up to 100% as soon as she starts her comeback, and I wish she had done a little residual selling from having gotten beat up so much. There was a really nice counter of the tilt-a-whirl by Windsor that she caught into a powerbomb that looked a little, maybe you could say it looked a little bit off, but I definitely liked it quite a bit. And I thought that it kind of worked in the setting. Windsor looks for like almost a variation of the Ocean Cyclone suplex, but takes her too long to get the pin, And Windsor's looking for like a sharpshooter, but gets countered, rolled through, and then locked into the octopus hold. And I think it worked to put over Laura as the submission specialist and the counter wrestler. I thought her selling was good. I thought Windsor's attacks looked great, and I gave this 3 stars.
I went 2.5. I'm with you. Everything you said was good. I thought Windsor's heel work was well done, and it made DiMatteo even easier in her role. So things worked well. There was a couple clunky spots, but man, overall, I thought they did a pretty good job. Then we got Mike Bird versus Flash Morgan Webster, and man, I had no hopes for this going in, but I really enjoyed it coming out. Gave it 3.25. I thought Bird was really good, and I wish they would not have talked about Bird being his teacher and Webster as the student, because they didn't really do that much, because you just had Bird beating his ass and being mean about it. So I wish commentary didn't mention that, because it kind of ruined the story that they were telling in the ring, which was Bird was the veteran and Webster was the youngster. But I didn't like this. I didn't like the element that this guy was actually Webster's student. I mean, teacher, because they came across as really out of line with what he was doing to Webster in a way. But I really liked Bird. He does with this really nice takedown early on, and Bird's disrespecting him. All Bird's offense is looking pretty crisp. And bottom line is, Flash Morgan Webster's taking an ass beating here. Finally, Webster makes him come back, and it was a lot of fun. I thought this was a really strong match, and I thought Bird's offense was very believable in what he was doing, and Webster was great fighting underneath Plucky Babyface. I give it 3.25 stars, man. What about you?
Yeah, I give it 3.5, and I agree with everything that you said there. I think they started out a little bit master teacher, kind of student teacher thing, but really that wasn't the story of the match, and you're right that, unfortunately, I think that it's hard in modern wrestling to ignore stuff that people know from outside of your narrative of your company. But at the same time, if it doesn't suit you, I mean, I really miss the days where you could just focus on what suits the story in your, like, that you're actually telling, and you don't have to do all the background stuff. Because yeah, I mean, this is just a vet versus younger guy match would probably have worked a little bit better. Or if you're just kind of presenting it that way, it works a lot more. I did like the Bird. He throws Webster hard onto the apron. I liked that. I think in general, Bird looked really nasty, and the dismissive, and the way that he throws like the Made in Japan looks really just like really, I don't know, just hurdy, I guess is how you describe it. I like the headbutt cut off from Webster, but you know, that Bird kind of uses that, gets sent to the floor on that. I wish Webster didn't throw Bird headfirst into the post. On top of being a babyface, you're not going to blade, so you shouldn't be getting thrown headfirst into the steel that way. Yeah, but he does use that to set up the swing around the post Rana that I thought looked really good. And yeah, I thought the finishing stretch was really nice. I think they did a good job putting over this new guillotine choke, the strangler for Webster, as now he's a big deal. And Bird gives the finger as he finally passes out, and they do referee stoppage on it, which I think is good. As, I mean, that kind of plays into the student-teacher thing, and the teacher refuses to tap out to his student, so he goes and blacks out. And like I said, 3.5 stars. I thought this was done really well.
What do you think of the London Riots or South Pacific Power Trip?
There's problems here with both these teams, honestly. I mean, the Riots are a natural heel team, but the crowd is behind them now, and they're basically babyfaces by default. And then, you know, the South Pacific Power Trip haven't turned, but the crowd's into them because of them leaving. And
because of Mania Weekend. I thought Mania, they got treated as babyfaces here in the States, and I think that rubbed off on the UK crowd, too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they've been kind of slowly turning, especially TK or especially Banks for a while, but TK is like kind of gone that way now that everyone knows that they're leaving. But that only really affects the beginning, as then it just turns into just this crazy balls to the walls, high octane kind of spot fest match with TK really breaking out all the stops. I loved he takes the big headbutt and he shouts that I'm not Samoan, and I thought that was great because you know he doesn't have that hard head. I thought that was just a funny little spot. Again, and when the Riots are in charge, I mean their stuff all can look super devastating and brutal, brawling around. But yeah, TK with the top rope Spanish fly, that was just crazy, and then he gets the Swanton. There's the coast to coast, like that little kind of mix up of moves. Everybody hitting a big diving move was just crazy. Riots hit the Jonah Driver. And then eventually the South Pacific Power Trip hit the version of the slingshot spear. I thought that was great. And then Slice of Heaven, Phoenix Driver from Travis was just nuts. And then the big Superman 450 from TK. And as I said, they really broke out everything, hit all the big spots, just wild, intense, crazy action with the crowd just wanting to enjoy it. And honestly, as I said, there wasn't going to be able to be heels. So in some ways, this was the way that you had to go. And both teams were really on point, really crisp, and really hit a lot of really flashy, great moves. But, you know, there's not a lot of story here, because the story of the match is that this is the farewell to the South Pacific Power Trip as they get the big win before they leave. And I gave this 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I went 4. I love this. I thought the crowd was totally into this. There was big dives. I dug the Orlando reaction, even though I know a lot of it had to do with TK and Dahlia leaving. I enjoy that they also getting the reaction, because it covered over to Banks also, and from Orlando getting over and then having a breakout performance on in Mania weekend. There was that one spot where Cooper just looks like he landed completely on his head. So I don't know if that Dahlia was planned to come in and throw her boot and do all that, or that was just a recovery spot for him. I'm not sure. But damn, it looked like he could have been crippled there. I liked how the Riots didn't want to make this a high-flying thing. They wanted to make it a brawl, so they turned it into a brawl. Just a fun hybrid of a brawl, spot fest hybrid of a match. Super fun stuff. Now, I got a question. Okay. Obviously, they were saying that TK and Dahlia were their visas had expired and they were going home. But now, didn't TK go to the UK WWE training thing?
Yeah, he was at the tryout.
So this whole thing was a complete work.
No, they're still going home.
Okay.
Yeah, no, they're still going home. They're just I'm not sure exactly when they're leaving, but this was going to be the last show that they were going to be able to be on.
Okay.
So that doesn't mean that they were leaving the second the show was over, though, because they were...
I understand that. I just found it weird that they were at a tryout if they're not going to be able to stay around is why.
Yeah, because Travis was at the tryout, too. But the thing is that, you know, if they do good in the tryout, then WWE would just sponsor a visa
right.
for them.
Okay.
You know, so.
Gotcha. Okay. I wasn't sure if they were working the story and they were going their WWE bound or they were... Or this is a true story. Okay, that's where I was trying to get at.
Yeah, because this came out months and months ago. I mean, I knew because they were on Morgan Webster's podcast, and they said when they were leaving a while back. And then Travis also, a long time ago, said when he was leaving a while back. So it just became kind of everyone was talking about it because it was, you know, everyone knew, oh, this is when they have to leave. And it was getting closer and closer. But then all the WWE stuff has happened since then. So now, like, because they wrestled on the Access thing for WWE. They were at the tryout in the UK. So, you know, there's a bunch of WWE stuff. But that all kind of came together after everybody already knew when they were leaving.
Cool. And then post-match, I really liked how Mustang, or not Mustang Mountain, that's what I was going to call him. But British Strong Style lays out the South Pacific Power couple and Ringkampf comes out and makes the save. I thought that was a nice little layer to add into the main event for later on. What about you?
Yeah, I liked that a lot. That was a nice little runoff spot that you don't see as regularly as you used to in wrestling.
Yeah, and then they talk about William Eaver and how the crowd sponsored him. I thought that was a nice touch too, you know, in his run.
Oh yeah, no, that was really cool. And again, it was just the kind of little thing that Progress can do that kind of connects back to the fans and keeps that authentic punk rock feeling.
Yep. And then we got Andrews versus Haskins. I love this match. I gave it 4 stars, even with that shitty finish. I thought the work was too good to screw him over on the take off points because of the finish being so terrible. But I thought the work here was so well done. I liked the feeling out processed. I thought the mat work was really slick and fast early on. I liked Haskins going after the leg and Andrews selling the leg good, and that all goes great. And then we see just an incredible tope by Haskins. Awesome shine. Haskins with a DVD, a Death Valley driver on the apron, and this is just a battle. But that finish was just shitty. But man, still an awesome match. What about you?
Yeah, and it was funny because I've talked a little bit about how Progress used to really feel like every match had a purpose and a point, and then this match really didn't. As it was starting, I go, why are they having this match? And then I hear them, we need to make sure that we for sure have a number one contender. And I was like, oh, okay, so this is a number one contenders match, then I can get into that, whatever. But then the problem is, like, I think that maybe they're trying to be too cute, but when you start that the concept is, like, we need to have a clear number one contender, and then you go through the match, and then there's this weird fuck finish, and then, as I said, like, this is more on the booking, and that's why I'm like, I'm actually, I gave it 3¾ star because of the minus quarter star for the shitty finish.
And it's totally fair. It's totally fair. I just didn't want to punish these workers. I thought they worked such a great match and really worked hard that I just couldn't do it.
Right. And I'm like, I'm punishing more the booking.
But I can totally see somebody doing it. I mean, it's not like, to me, I feel like I'm in the minority on protecting the match because of the shit finish. But go on.
Right. And it's like, this finish could have been done and could work. But it's like when you say, when what you come back from it is just, oh, you're both get a shot. After you said that this is about setting up that we need to have a clear number one contender, that's not a clear number one contender. That's two guys. You know what I mean? So I'm just like, I get what you're saying, but don't set it up that way. Just say, like, we wanted to have a number one contender, and then, oh, okay, now we don't have a number one contender. You're both number one contender. But, when, like, for me, I just feel like, well, if it's so important to have a clear number one contender, then why is it okay to just do this? Like, you can have the finish, but then you can't have the company then go, it's a three-way. Because that doesn't finish what you're saying, like, what you're setting out, what you're trying to do. Loved Haskins' focus on the leg. I thought the two low drop kicks.
Or this is their shitty way of getting to a three-way.
Right. Yeah, no. Yeah. To me, the heat goes on the company, and I think that makes it kind of suck, and that's why I'm more willing to take away that quarter star, because I'm like, you guys shouldn't be okay with not having a clear number one contender when you say that was the whole fucking point. But yeah, the match itself I really enjoyed. There's two nice low drop kicks to the knee by Haskins that he uses to set up rolling into a stretch muffler. I really loved that.
Oh, focus on the leg.
That sequence was so good. Mandrews with his dives, his rolling through. I loved the counter of Mandrews usually does the flip over the top into the wheelbarrow into the double stomp, and he gets countered and caught for Haskins to... I think he sets up into the sharpshooter there. I think that was great. Haskins catching the... Mandrews goes for the shooting star press off the top, misses, then goes for the shooting star press and the standing one, and that gets caught into the triangle. And I've talked about that the catching into the triangle is overdone. It works so well there because Haskins already countered one shooting star press. He goes for another one thinking that he's going to catch him off guard, but he's still on guard and catches it. It doesn't feel forced, doesn't feel contrived. It makes sense because they're trying to one-up each other, but they're both a step ahead of each other, and I really like that. The pin, while chapping out the finish, we've already said sucked. But yeah, I love this match a lot. 3¾ star, probably in the range of 4 star, but like these guys had, a match that I gave like 4.5 star in OTT just a couple months ago. I mean, these guys just have fantastic chemistry together.
They are. They know how to tell a story, and both are good at sellers. Yeah, they're both fantastic wrestlers, and they're easily could be. Andrews doesn't seem like they. I don't get it. They just don't seem like they want to pull the trigger ever on Andrews. Am I right? Or
yeah, I mean, it's such a for Progress. You mean like specifically? Yeah, it's this weird thing because of him having that shortest title reign ever. It's really interesting to be like, what are they like? They never really put him back to where you think he could win it. Right now, it feels like he could win it, but you also know with the UK title stuff, it's like, well, I can't see him having another short reign, you know?
Yeah.
So it does feel like they never kind of just went with him again after that, which is...
Yeah, because it seems weird because he has, like, great matches, like, here, and then he came and makes Eddie Dennis... He gets people to believe that Eddie Dennis is a really good worker by tagging with him, and Dennis is a solid worker, don't get me wrong, but he's not nearly at the level that Andrews does. But Andrews is able to have 4-star tag matches with Eddie Dennis as his tag partner, or having the great run at the Strong Style tournament last year, you know, where and then him and Hero have that match. I mean, there's just so many they had so many great moments, but they don't make it. But none of his moments seem like to the company never follows up on it to make him a bigger commodity because of all these great moments he has.
Yeah, I think it's weird because his history and progress, he's like a very big deal that's kind of underplayed, as you said. Like, they don't really make him the legendary figure of progress that he could be. And I think it is because he goes in and out of TNA, goes in and out of progress, and now he's into WWE. I think it's just he's not a guy that they could build long-term around because he's always out around doing other stuff. But I will say that you're kind of a Eddie Dennis thing there is, I saw the Lucha Brothers versus FSU for a match that I think I gave about 4.5 stars. And I don't think that the Lucha Brothers and Eddie Dennis and Morgan Webster are having, over 4-star match. So I definitely get where you're coming from, that Mandrews brings a lot to the table in those tag team matches even as well.
Yeah, and I really like Dennis, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's at that level of, Andrews. One other thing is, he kind of has, I don't want to say he has a Matt Hardy vibe, but he reminds me of Matt Hardy in the WWF, where he's more over than the push that they give him type thing they do with him, because they beat Andrews they beat him like a punching bag a lot of times, because that guy does many, many jobs, so then he's not getting protected in the booking,
Yeah, no, and you're right there, but it's kind of funny as you say that, because as you say that, I think, he's kind of also like Jeff Hardy in that he has a band, he's got other stuff that he does outside of wrestling that he's really into, on top of running
But eventually Jeff Hardy got a main event run with CM Punk, and before that,
Right.
Matt Hardy really quite got that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even saying necessarily push-wise, but I'm just saying, the way that you kind of look at him, so it's kind of a hybrid of both Hardy Boys in that regard, that he's got his own wrestling company that he runs. He's got other interests outside of wrestling that he's really into. He's obviously very smart at marketing himself and doing all this other stuff, to where I think that a company like Progress, they want a guy that they feel like they have more, WWE the same way. They want a guy that they feel like they have more control over him. And Mandrews, I think, is because he's so self-made, I think people are worried about pushing him because he doesn't need you as much as you might need him.
Yeah, good point. That's a really good point. And then we get Jack Sexsmith versus Paul Robinson, man. What did you make of this?
This was probably my favorite Jack Sexsmith match so far.
I agree. Totally agree.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people really, really like him and are starting to get more behind him. And I even thought that the Gibson match was good, but I think that this was better just because of Robinson's just viciousness.
Yeah.
And just really making him kill this guy. And the fact that by the end of it, I really felt like Jack Sexsmith got serious and really felt more like he could hold his own in some ways. I mean, from the start, Jack Sexsmith looks great. He's looking for a cheeky Nando's elbow bite, which I thought was kind of a weird spot there. I love Paul Robinson just viciously killing Jack Sexsmith. Pendulum DDT that Jack Sexsmith does looked like out of a counter of the curb stomp, looked fantastic. The big slugfest that they have, again, just lends so much credibility to Sexsmith because Paul Robinson is looked at as such a killer. Sexsmith kind of gaze up as he gets him with the big lip lock, which I could have done without, honestly, but whatever, that's fine. The cock face with the condom, I don't need it. I don't like it, honestly, with the fish hook and all that, but I do love that Paul bites his hand to get out of the hold, which I just think is just fits his heel character so good, as he then grabs the condom off his hand and starts chewing on it. And
was that not fucking only a nasty, disgusting heel like Paul Robinson can do that spot and make it work, and that fucking worked so well,
Yeah, no, it was perfect, and yeah, I mean, Sexsmith gets hit with the Essex Destroyer, and he just completely no-sells it to hit his own Canadian Destroyer, and I just thought that was just a kind of a wild spot there, as he kind of continues to not even sell residual selling there. Paul is actually selling better than him, which I just think is so funny. Curb stomp, Oz cutter, and nothing can keep Sexsmith down. And Paul Robinson is just so pissed off that he even goes up top and hits the last, that big final shooting star press that he hasn't even been doing high flying moves. I just thought that was so crazy. And then, yeah, Sexsmith kicks out of that, and it's just nuts. He's looking for another curb stomp, but Sexsmith launches him up into the air, and then boom, he grabs just a normal cross face. And that's where I'm like, I love it so much. I hope he sticks to using just that and he doesn't keep doing the cock face with the fish hook with the condom, because that just kind of annoys me. And
getting comedies him out.
Yeah, and I just... I mean, why is it okay for him to be fishhooking the guy? They give other people account for fishhooking, but somehow he's allowed to fishhook? I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that the narrative, the story that they tell, the emotion that they draw out of you, the just sick, disgusting spots like the condom and all of it just really, really worked to tell this, like, overall, this story that takes you from beginning to... I mean, this is not even that long of a match, but it really kind of takes you on a journey through it. And I gave it 4 stars. I mean, this was almost a spectacle, and I think really made Jack Sexsmith look like a contender going forward into Super Strong Style, and a guy that I could believe getting past the first round.
Yeah, I gave it 3.5 stars, and I really have nothing to add because I thought you hit everything except Paul Robinson's final match, huh?
That's it. He's got some weird blood disease, I guess.
Yeah, man, what a shame. That guy was a great heel. I mean... Yeah. Great heel. Honestly, you could arguably make he was probably maybe was the best heel if you combine the last 3 years together. I mean, just doing great heel work. Just nothing redeeming out of the guy. Just a bastard. And he just looked like a bastard. And he played a bastard. He was freaking just a great heel. And he's going to be he's a guy, man. You're going to miss him because he can flesh out a card. He can work top of the card. He can work underneath. He's a guy who's an important part of a lot of these cards that Progress did. And he's going to be missed, man. I'm sorely missed on my end. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to end up for a lot of people, a lot of places, and just in general with this whole UK thing, however it goes, as we talked about earlier with the WWE's kind of co-opting of stuff. I mean, he's going to end up being a footnote in the history of it, but if you didn't get to experience it or you don't go back and watch it, you're not going to, he's not going to be a guy that people think much of. But coming up, Backyard Wrestling with Will Ospreay, really being kind of the influencer for a lot of Will Ospreay's crazier moves. But, I mean, the guy just great body control, but such an amazing hybrid of high-flying and viciousness, stiff-looking strikes because of his background, kickboxing, a guy that was always believable even for his small stature early on, and then to go from that to lead into, turning on Ospreay in Progress, forming this heel character that then went outside of Progress and all over the indies that was super, super fucking just hated heel, no redeeming qualities, and... It was almost like you always knew it was there, but he leaned into it earlier than Ospreay, and he really exploited it for all it was worth, and became a guy who made all of his matches mean so much more, to where you really wish that he was able to have done more often and was being used better in the high profile places. And then,
oh yeah, you just wish he was like bigger, taller, because he had all the characteristics. He just didn't have the physicality to be like a lead heel in a promotion,
No, exactly. And it really, as I said, he'll be the footnote guy that people say, oh yeah, did you ever hear of Ospreay's best friend? Oh, when Will Ospreay is, remembered as the first Gaijin to win Best of the Super Juniors or whatever, all this stuff. Or I guess he was the first British born person, like, oh yeah, but he had this tag team partner, and oh yeah, they wrestled when they were kids, and they came up with all those moves. And now I love that I watched the Ospreay versus Jay White match that just happened, and they called
that. I haven't seen it yet.
It's fantastic. It really is. I mean, it's something else. But Ospreay hits that 630 spinning kick, and they called it the Robinson special. And I was just like, oh, that's kind of. That's kind of great. Hopefully at least that can live on a little bit. Because this guy, he was something else, man. I mean, the guy really brought character work and viciousness to his wrestling that you wouldn't expect from someone his size. And it sucks to see him gone.
Yeah, he was believable in that role, too. Yep. Even with the size, even only being like 5'6 or whatever he was.
And skinny.
Yeah, he looked like a tapeworm. But he was ripped, Not ripped, but like hard. He looked hard.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, man, main event, Ring Comp versus British Strong Style. Wow. I love the mat work early on. Dieter Jr. with that cravat, loving it. Love the Johnny Saint escape by Axel Dieter. Ring Comp standing tall early on. the Triple H water spot by British Strong Style. Fantastic, because Dunn did it terribly. Don't know if that was on purpose or what, but it was funnier than shit. This is just turning into a fight. I like the distraction that sets up the heat. Working over Thatcher, working the leg. Love the timing of not allowing Thatcher to tag out. Finally, the hot tag to Dieter. It's breaking down and turning into a fight. Tyler Bates pause and release suplex on Big Van on Walter was like, holy freaking shit.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, wow. Great, great heel finish. 4-star match. Everyone had a chance. I felt Walter was kind of like a background to this. I don't know why, but it just felt that way. I felt maybe they were trying to focus on Dieter being at his last show, being his last progress match, maybe, and Walter didn't want to take away from him. But man, it was still a strong 4-star match. It wasn't about a bunch of flips and dives. I mean, it was all about great wrestling and great timing and telling a story, man. This was good stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, the opening, the beginning with Bate and Dieter, as you said, was just, Dieter looked amazing, and then when they do kind of use some double teams to get control on him eventually and work over Dieter later on, it was fantastic. But I mean, what they did here in this match that I think more places should do, as you talked about Walter kind of being that supporting role in this match, it was about Dieter, it being his last time, showing off his finesse, showing off his skill, also getting some babyface sympathy on him because the crowd probably wants the guy who's leaving to get that one last big win like they already saw earlier with the South Pacific Power Trip, you know, like, oh, we want to send them off with a win because people like that now and they don't think about wrestling in the terms of, like, you should go out on your back anymore, right? But so that was his role. And then they turned around and they had a role with Thatcher where, from the start, when Thatcher was really starting to grind down on Dunn, Seven comes in, and Seven being the mastermind, it almost plays into this even more. Seven comes in with no tag and kind of breaks it up, and they're just exploiting Thatcher's temper. Because that's a thing that I don't think a lot of people really exploit as well as they can, is that Thatcher's a guy that you can get him worked up, and they did such a great job here, especially his facials show it off, and Seven did it. Seven was able to bring out the temper of Thatcher, so he's off his game plan because he's thinking more about his rage. He's making mistakes that he normally wouldn't make, and he's really trying to fight instead of grapple, which is where he really excels. So I really loved that story. Walter, again, as you said, was the supporting member of the team. Walter almost never shows any weakness, but when he gets hit with that big delayed suplex, I mean, my God. Tyler Bate is just a fucking freak of nature, dude. Like, this kid is something else. And obviously it shows with WWE so strongly behind him now as their UK champion and hopefully looking forward. The finish, obviously bullshit heel finish, but it works so well because these guys are the bullshittiest of bullshit heels.
Yeah, exactly.
And not a lot of goofing around. I mean, these British Song Style Trios matches have been really hit or miss for me. The one with the Elite in Fight Club was decent, but there's a lot that are really bad. There was one with, you know, Scroll and Jimmy Havoc, and I'm forgetting the third man right now, which sucks. I can't believe I'm forgetting it. But it was Sami Callihan. Did not like that one. A lot of goofing around, but there's no goofing around here. This was pretty much all fight, except for the water spot that they used to troll the crowd at times, which I just thought was great. And I gave this 4.25 star. I'm thinking this is at that level where I'm going to probably want it to be on the rewatch at the end of the year when I'm doing my match of the year lists.
Well, that's awesome, man. Easy thumbs up show, right?
Oh, yeah. God, yeah. No question on that. I mean, every match I think was good, except for the opener was the only one that I didn't love. And every other match I had different reasons to really love it and also enjoy it. It was like characters I am invested in combined with good storytelling and just solid work.
Yeah, and all the matches seemed different. They weren't all samey, which, you know, I think that's really important. And, yeah, just a great show overall, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, guys, next week we will not be recording because I'll be down from Thursday through Saturday at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame ceremonies, and I'll be traveling back Sunday, so just not enough time to do a show. So sorry about that, but you can still follow me at Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. What about you, Tim? Anything you got to plug?
Had a couple guest spots recently. I was on Burning Wrestling or Burning Spirits talking about Big Japan's In the Survivor show. That was a lot of fun. That's over on Voices of Wrestling. Burning Spirits. It was a good episode. We talked about some different Japanese stuff. Really enjoyed the Yuji Okabayashi versus Hideki Suzuki match quite a bit. So I'd say go check that out. I was also on Wrestling with Words Snackdown. We talked about seafood. That's a food podcast, so that went pretty well. Just talked about my life choices. I don't eat proteins, or primarily don't eat proteins outside of seafood. So, you know, I'm a big seafood guy, obviously. I'll sneak a burger here and there. I'll admit it on this podcast. But it's very rare that I eat anything other than that. So we talked about all that stuff and my experiences with different seafoods. Check that out if you're interested. And then if you're really having a tough time because you don't have us next week, you need something to listen to, I would recommend going out and listening to Psychology is Dead here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. QT Moody and Brock Janke, former guest of Lucha Undead, or Brock Yankee, however it's pronounced. They did Psychology is Dead for about, I think, like 4 to 5 hours, all about AJ Styles, who is a lot of people's wrestler of the year. They go through his entire career from beginning till end because Brock is not a fan of AJ Styles, the guy that a lot of people think is wrestler of the year. So they talk about why he doesn't like him. And
that's interesting. That sounds like something I need to listen to.
Yeah, so kind of breaking down what it is, how could someone not like AJ Styles, I guess is the big question. So if, as I said, if you don't have anything to listen to and you're just dying because you miss us next week, pop that in, give it a quick listen, and maybe give Quentin's podcast a listen every time.
Yeah, it sounds like something I need to listen to on my 9-hour ride, so that'll cut off at least half the ride out there to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. So that's half my ride, and maybe I'll sleep the other 4 hours.
Yeah, that's perfect right there. So it's just perfect for you as well. So that should be coming out here at any moment. Otherwise, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
All right, guys, thanks a lot for listening. Check you out in 2 weeks.
I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh. My perceptions are bad.